Monday with our monthly listener request show. So until then, I hope you get a chance to share some music with the people in your.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join the conversation by emailing ideas at WPR.org and like us on Facebook at the Ideas Network.
Eduardo.
This is Old Time Radio Drama. Good evening. I'm Norman Gilliland, and tonight we'll range broadly from the intricacies of marriage with a real-life married couple in radio comedy to coming to America and the experience of the immigrant, a case for the FBI, a twisted story from The Whistler, and we'll end up, if you dare to go there, in the inner sanctum. I'm Norman Gilliland, and first up, this from Wild Bill Hickok. He was a real person, but had little to do with the character played on radio and television by Guy Madison with his sidekick, Andy Devine, as Jingles. Children's Fair, to be sure, but something that tells us a little bit about the entertainments of the 1950s when Westerns were all the rage. Tonight, it's a story called The Gunsmoke Blockade, taking us to the world of railroad builders and a character named Blackbeard, played by Lou Merrill. This is Wild Bill Hickok from January 6, 1954.
Kellogg's, the greatest name in cereals, presents Wild Bill Hickok! Hi, you folks, hold on your hats and pass those Kellogg sugar pops. Because here comes Guy Madison as Wild Bill Hickok and his pal Jingles, which is me, Andy Devine. We've got another rootin' tootin' Wild Bill Hickok adventure story for you. From the cereal you can eat out of the bowl or out of the box, the cereal with the sweetening already on it, Kellogg's Sugar Pops!
Today, Kellogg's Sugar Pops, the cereal with the sweetening already on it, brings you Wild Bill Hickok. Transcribed in Hollywood and starring Guy Madison as Wild Bill and Andy Devine as his pal Jingles. In just 30 seconds, you'll hear the exciting story, The Gunsmoke Blockade. Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops are tops. Tops as a cereal with a little milk or cream. Tops as a snack right out of the box. Either way, you don't add sugar because the sweetening's already on them. They're shot with sugar. Yes, either way, you'll get plenty of pleasure eating those golden nuggets of ready sweetened corn. Enjoy Sugar Pops often. Have Mom look for the package of Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops with the pictures of Guy Madison and Andy Devine riding on the front with the words, Shot with Sugar. The railroad men fought a raw winter to lay their steel through the hills to the edge of Lonesome Valley. But there they were stopped. Hard-eyed gunfighters blocked their right-of-way from there on. That was the situation when the railroaders sent a special train to bring United States Marshal Wild Bill Hickok and Jingles up for a desperate try at breaking the Gunsmoke Blockade.
Well, it sure was nice of Mr. Hamilton to send a special train just for us, wasn't it?
It sure was, Jingles. But don't get the idea that this is just a joyride on your private engine.
Yeah, that's what's bothering me. Ain't you got no idea who these gun-toting hombres are, Mr. Hamilton?
Yeah, not in the least, Jingles. More than that, I don't know why they want to stop the railroad.
That's what beats me.
You sure they ain't Indians?
No, Jingles. We've had our share of trouble with Indians before, but these are hard cases from the valley.
You seen them, huh?
Yeah, too close.
Would you recognize any of them again, Mr. Hamilton?
Sure, Bill. Their leader's a gigantic man with a big black beard. I'd know him at a convention.
Well, that's something to go on anyway.
Yeah, Bill, but where are we going to find him? We ain't very well acquainted in this section of Texas.
Maybe he'll find us, Jingles.
Now, Bill, you know a Jasper like that ain't going to come hunting us unless it's with his six-gun sparking fire.
That's just what I mean, buddy.
Oh, well, I don't like the sound of it one little bit.
We're coming to the curve, Mr. Hamilton. You gents better hang on.
Get a grip, Jingles.
Let her rip. Woo! That was a humdinger. Sure hope Buckshot and Joker didn't slide off that flat car back there.
Not a chance, Jingles. I had special stalls built for them.
Getting close to end the line, gents. Coming to the valley.
Uh-oh. I don't like the way he said that, Bill.
Yep. From here on, we can look for trouble.
If it's that close, Mr. Hamilton, I wonder if I could ask a favor of you.
Yeah, sure, Bill. Anything.
Well, if there's likely to be gunplay, I'd like to go back and check up on our horses.
Sure thing. Hey, Mac.
Yep?
Can you stop here for a minute?
Sorry, Mr. Hamilton. Brace yourself now.
Come on, Jingles. We'll take a look at the horses.
Yeah, I sure wouldn't want nothing to happen to them. You really looking for trouble, Bill?
I sure am, partner, and plenty of it. Steady there, Buckshot. Yeah, Joker's doing all right.
Yeah. Bill, don't you reckon it might be a good idea for me to stay back here and keep an eye on the horses? They might get lonesome, you know.
If you figure you want to, partner. Easy, Buckshot, easy. There you are, Joker.
Oh, now, Bill, you know me better than that.
Yeah, I never saw you shy away from a gunfight yet, Jingles. Well, let's get back to the engine.
Take it easy, Joker. I might need you in a big rush.
How'd you make out with the horses, Bill?
They're fine, Mr. Hamilton. All right, climb up, Jingles.
Yeah. Mighty nice of you to stop for us, Mr. Hamilton.
Not at all. Like to see a man be good to his horse.
They've been pretty good to us.
All right, Mac. You can get rolling.
Yes, sir. But from here on, you better have those six guns ready, Marshal Hickok. I got a feeling they're waiting for us.
Well, if they are, they sure know we're coming. You sure couldn't sneak up on nobody with this iron monster belching fire the way it does.
That's right, partner. But if they're waiting, they'll find we'll be putting out a little fire ourselves.
Now you're talking, Bill. If it's a fight they want, I reckon we can give it to them. Pour on the coal, Mac. Let's go get them.
Say, Wranglers, wouldn't it be swell if you could know today just what's going to happen tomorrow? Just imagine the fun you could have telling everybody what was going to take place 24 hours ahead of time. Well, I'm afraid can't any of us do that, but there's one thing I know is going to happen tomorrow for sure. Yep, tomorrow and every day, lots and lots of folks are going to be enjoying Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops. Starting first thing tomorrow morning, there'll be folks enjoying them for breakfast and all day long for snacks. Now, either way you enjoy Sugar Pops, you don't need any sugar because the sweetening's already on them. They're shot with sugar. Enjoy yourself some Sugar Corn Pops tomorrow. Tell Mom to look for the package with Guy and Andy racing their horses pell-mell across the prairie with the words, shot with sugar, right on front. Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops.
Yippee! Sugar Pops.
They're sugar-coated, tastes so sweet, just pour on some milk.
Boy, they're neat.
Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops. Sugar Pops are tops. Now, Sugar Pops, you know, are sweet.
But cowboys know there's an extra treat.
Right out of the box, take a handful out. Pop them into your mouth as you run about. Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops. Sugar Pops are tops.
With only the engineer and the railroad superintendent in the cab with Wild Bill and Jingles, the lone engine snorted on to the end of the line. And waiting in grim silence over the last steel rail stood a dozen hard-looking men on horseback. Their leader, a gigantic figure with a big black beard.
Well, here they come again, boys. Guess they ain't learned their lesson yet.
What are you figuring we're to do this time, Blackbeard?
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do the same thing we did last time they brought that snorting steam horse into Lonesome Valley. And we're going to continue to do it till they stay out and they're all dead.
Don't seem to stop them. Just gun smoke and lead don't.
Well, it will before we're through. It's them or us.
Well, that way, I reckon it'll have to be them.
You're darn right it will. Ain't room in this valley for both, so they're staying out. At the end of my six guns. How about it, boys?
Well, if that's what you say, that's the way it's going to be, Blackbeard. We elected you to lead us, and I reckon we'll go along with your judgment.
All right, then. Spread out. Take cover so they don't see you. And when you start shooting this time, make sure they get the idea that we don't want them here. ¶¶
How much further, Mr. Hamilton?
Around the next bend, Jingles.
That way they jumped you every time before?
Yeah, that's right, Bill. They won't let our crews go to work.
Hold it. I just saw the sun going off of the rifle barrel.
Rifle barrel? Where?
Right there, Jingles.
Bill Rifle. Well, we only got our six guns with us.
This is where as we go, gents.
Hey, you can't stop here. We'll be sitting ducks for them rifles. Doggone it, they're too far up.
Got no more track, Jingles. This engine can't take off across the prairie like a jackrabbit, you know.
And from now on, I'm going to stick the Joker. Still, we ain't in a fix that's exactly comfortable right now, you know.
You said it, partner. They always attack right here at the edge of the hills, Mr. Hamilton.
Now, that's right, Bill.
Funny thing.
Now, there ain't nothing funny about it, Bill Hickok. That lad's coming close enough to singe my ear.
You're not getting hit, Jingles.
Can I help it if they're bad shots? You ain't wanting me to get plugged full of holes, are you?
No, but those Jaspers are good shots. You ever had any men killed, Mr. Hamilton?
No, Bill. They nicked a few, but they haven't killed anybody.
Funny thing.
Now, Bill, you quit saying it's funny. I could laugh right now. It was the last thing I had to do.
All right, Jingles. We've learned all we can here.
I ain't learned a thing.
Throw this iron horse in reverse, Mac. Take us back to our horses.
You backing out of this gunfight, Hickok?
Not exactly, Mr. Hamilton. Maybe I'm just putting it on.
I don't get you, Marshal. And I'm not sure I like it. I went to a lot of trouble and expense to get you up here to open that right away.
I know that. Jingles and I'll do everything we can.
Well, it looks to me like you're falling down on the job right now.
Now, hold on, Mr. Hamilton. You ain't going to get nowhere talking to Bill like that.
Never mind, Jingles.
But, Bill...
I don't know what you had in mind, Mr. Hamilton, but I generally do a job my own way.
Just get it done, Hickok. I got a railroad to build down through Lonesome Valley, and I'm going to do it if I have to call the army.
Bill, I never thought I'd live to ride Joker into another town again. That doggone lad was flying through that engine cab like a swarm of hornets.
Funny thing, Jingles.
Bill Hickok, if you say that once more, I'm liable to forget we're partners and stomp you into the ground. What do you keep saying it for, Bill?
Those Jaspers behind those rifles were right good shots, Jingles.
Well, now that's right big news to me. I was only right in front of their sights.
But you didn't get killed, Jingles, and that's the point.
And a right good point, if I do say so myself.
That means they didn't want to kill us. Why?
Well, they just thought that they'd save us for seed. Maybe we'd bring a bigger batch back with us so they could kill more at once, I reckon.
And we didn't see any of them.
Nobody with a black beard, you mean?
That's right. Now keep your eyes peeled for a gent like that in this town, Jingles.
It's a right busy town. Look at all them freight wagons over yonder.
Yeah, warehouses, freight wagons. Maybe this adds up.
Oh, Joker, blow up and stand right there. Bill, look. Look at that office with all them freight wagons behind it. Read what it says on that sign.
Blackbeard's wagons haul anything anywhere in the West.
Reckon that's our man, Bill.
Right now, and stick my six guns on it, partner. What do you say we pay him a little visit? Get over that hitch rack, Buckshot.
You too, Joker, and don't drag your feet. We never found anybody that easy before, Bill. If he'd have been a snake, you'd have bit us.
You might yet, partner. Watch yourself.
Yep, there he is, Bill. I know him anywhere.
Well, howdy, gents. Got something you want hauled in or out of Lonesome Valley? If you do, I'm your man. Everybody calls me Blackbeard.
I reckon you're the man we're looking for, all right.
Easy, Jingle.
Sure I am. Got a string of freighters covering the entire West. What are you shipping, gent?
Nothing just yet. Just wanted to ask you, how you getting along with the railroad men?
Boss, the railroader.
Railroader. By Jude, you got gall to come into my office. I'll break you in two.
Now, hold on. Now, watch out, Bill.
You're going to get carried out of here, mister.
Not until you hear what I came to say.
I ain't listening to no railroader.
Get him, boss.
Pull a gun on that big Jasper, Jake.
I can't do it, boss.
How come?
He's got a gun on me.
Now, you see how things stand, Mr. Blackbeard.
You shinderheads. I'll stomp you both through the floor.
Yeah, the time while Bill Hickok gets through with you, there ain't gonna be enough for me to work on.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You Wild Bill Hickok?
That's what they call me, mister.
And I'm his deputy, Jingles.
Well, Why didn't you say so?
You aren't given much to listening, Blackbeard.
Well, now, let's just sit down here and talk this thing over.
I ain't got no call to be fighting with you, Marshal. But I sure get red-eyed when I hear the word railroad.
What's your scrap with the railroad, Blackbeard?
I ought to be right plain, Marshal. I'm running freight wagons. The railroads put me out of business, and I got plenty of troubles now.
You have? What kind of trouble?
Winter storms bogged down 10 of my rigs on the way over the hills to the warehouse at the junction.
That's east of the mountain.
Yeah, when those blasted railroads come through.
Well, that's only 40 miles, ain't it, Bill?
Might as well be 40,000 in the winter. From here west, I can operate all year round. But them hills is sure death all winter.
You can't stop the railroads, Blackbeard.
I can and I will.
Not by bushwhacking, you ain't.
Bushwhacking? I don't know what you're talking about.
Boss, shut up, Jake.
It's no good, Blackbeard. They've identified you as a leader in at least one attack on the railroad.
We gonna take him to jail, Bill?
Jail? We ain't killed nobody.
Not yet, but if you keep up this gunplay, there's a good chance you will.
We don't need them blasted railroads. Wagons is for the west, Hickok. Let them keep their smoke pots back on the other side of the Mississippi where they belong.
You're fighting the wind, Blackbeard. The railroads have land grants for a line through Lonesome Valley.
Yeah, and if you keep up what you're doing, you're again the law. Now, you better listen to Bill while he's giving you a chance.
Chance? Nothing. The railroads ain't coming through, you hear me? I'll tear up the tracks with my bare hands. They'll not get 1 foot more in this valley.
They'll have a full crew laying track at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, Blackbeard, and I'll be there with them. The law's on their side.
Hang the law! Some blasted railroads are us freighters. We got here first, and we're going to stay.
Now, listen here, Blackbeard.
You listen, lawman. The first man that drives a spike to a rail tomorrow morning is a dead duck. And if you're both fool enough to back his play, you'll both be dead, too.
You know, if I could stop in your living room now and ask you whether you like Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops better as a breakfast cereal or as a snack, I'll bet it'd come out pretty even. Most folks like them fine both ways. Some like them a mite better as snacks, others like them more as a cereal, but all in all, just about everybody likes them both ways. As a cereal or as a snack, those golden nuggets or ready sweetened pops of corn sure are popular with everybody. And remember, no matter how you enjoy Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops, you never have to add any sugar because the sweetening's already on them. They're shot with sugar. Have Mom get some. Get the package with Guy Madison and Andy Devine thundering down the trail on their horses. And look for the words, shot with sugar. That's Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops.
Yippee! Sugar Pops.
They're sugar-coated, tastes so sweet. Just pour on some milk.
Boy, they're neat.
Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops. Sugar Pops are tops. Now Sugar Pops, you know, are sweet.
But cowboys know there's an extra treat.
Right out of the box, take a handful out. Pop one into your mouth as you run about. Kellogg's Sugar Corn Pops. Sugar Pops are tops.
It was late afternoon by the time Wild Bill and Jingles had returned to the railroad superintendent and convinced him to resume work the next morning.
All right, Hickok, I'll do it, but it won't be easy. I still got a feeling it won't work.
Sometimes you have to take a chance, Mr. Hamilton.
I spend my life taking chances, Hickok. Don't preach to me about that.
Bill ain't preaching, Mr. Hamilton. It's leading up to something else. Ain't you, Bill?
Well, speak up, Marshal. My neck's out a mile now.
There's a wire I'd like you to send to the junction along with your request for a crew.
All right, come on. Got a telegraph set in this caboose I use for an office.
Reckon he'll do it, Bill?
I don't know, partner.
Spring it, Marshal. What's this new wrinkle? Go right up.
Hey, this is a regular office, ain't it?
Yep. Oh, excuse me a minute. Message coming over.
Can you get what it's saying, Bill?
Yeah, just asking what Hamilton's going to do.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that myself a little bit.
All right, Marshal. What else do you have in your mind?
Send orders for your crew to load everything in Blackbeard Junction's warehouse on the same train they're bringing through tonight.
Here it comes.
You crazy, Hickok. We got no authorization from Blackbeard for that.
Send a separate wire to the warehouse for authorization and sign it Blackbeard.
Now you're out of your head, Hickok. You'll fry me in bear grease before this is over.
I'll take full responsibility.
You'll sign a statement to that effect before I'll send the first word.
That's all right with me. Start sending now.
Yeah, and when that old engine starts up to the end of the railroad track tomorrow morning, get ready for the biggest all-out ruckus this country's seen in many a moon. Bill.
Cross your fingers, Jingles.
Fingers, eyes, and toes. I might never get untangled.
Hickok, look.
Bill, front of the engine. Blackbeard and the meanest looking bunch of hombres I ever saw.
This is a payoff, partner. Come on. Better stay there till I call you, Mr. Hamilton.
Well, not on your life. I started this, and I'm going to be in at the finish.
You can bring on your whole gang, Hickok. You come for a showdown.
You're making a mistake, Blackbeard.
Not the way we see it. I said I'd shoot the first man to drive a spike to a rail this morning. By Jude, I'm going to do it.
Bring me a sledgehammer and a spike, Mr. Hamilton. Have your men lay the next rail in place.
Coming right up, Bill. All right, men, start laying track.
Bill, you ain't going to try that spike, are you?
I sure am.
You're digging your grave, Hickok.
Here it comes, Bill. Put it right in place, men.
Where does the spike go, Mr. Hamilton?
Alternate sides and alternate sides, Marshal.
I'm warning you, Hickok.
Hand me that sledgehammer.
Bill.
Back off, Jingles. If he gets me, take him to jail. Now, Blackbeard, here goes the first spike.
Bill! Oh, woo-wee! Doggone it, Bill Hickok. Someday I'm going to have heart failure for some of your loco doing.
Pick up Blackbeard's gun, Jingles.
You ain't one yet, Hickok. Them railroads ain't coming through you here.
I'll give you a choice, Blackbeard. You listen to me for 5 minutes. Go to jail right now for trying to kill me.
Now, don't none of the rest of you varmints get any ideas about shooting in the meantime. I ain't so bad with a six-gun myself.
All right, Hickok, I'll listen. But you ain't got nothing to say that'll hold interest for me.
Now, that's where you're wrong.
All right, Mr. Hamilton, bring up that string of cars.
Right, Bill. Highball that other engine, Mac.
Coming right up, Mr. Hamilton.
Now, Blackbeard, keep your eyes open and follow me to those cars.
Yeah, and the rest of your freighter gang can step right on along behind you, with me behind them, just like a big caboose.
What are you up to, Hickok?
You can wait and see. Here we are. Hold the train, Mr. Hamilton.
Right.
All right, that's good. Hold her there.
There you are. What do you see on those flat cars?
Boxes. Boxes with my name on them.
Right. Consigned to you.
But I didn't order this. Somebody stole them.
You didn't have sense enough to order them, so Bill did.
Hickok, you... Wait a minute. All right, Marshal, start talking. I'll give you 5 minutes, then we start blasting. Stand by, boys.
You start shooting now, and there'll be a lot of men killed without a reason, Blackbeard.
Talk, I said. Explain this.
Shut up and listen. You said you couldn't get your goods across the mountains, and your wagons were empty and idle.
That's right.
All right. Here's your goods. Brought over those same mountains in one night, waiting to fill your wagon.
Yeah, but...
You take it from here. Catching on, Blackbeard?
Yeah. Yeah, I sure am, Marshal. I've been a jughead. The railroad brings my goods to Lonesome Valley. I split it from there all over the west in the wagons.
And no winter layoff on account of the weather.
Dad Burnett, you ought to help the railroad get built instead of standing there with smoking six guns in your hand.
You're right, Jingles, and by Jude, we will. Give a hand here, Mr. Hamilton. I want to shake with you to seal a bargain.
That's fine, Blackbeard. We can both shake hands with Wild Bill and Jingles for bringing us together.
You said it. Step up, boys, and shake with Wild Bill and Jingles. Come on, all of you.
Hold on, you slap-happy galoot. Before you waste any more of that good energy, now just reach down and grab one of them steel rails. All this heavy shaking might shake it right into place. We'll have a railroad built before you know it.
And now, here are the stars of Wild Bill Hickok, Guy Madison, and Andy Devine.
Andy, what's our Wild Bill Hickok story for Friday?
We got a rip snorter, Guy. Coming up, it's all about a traveling medicine show and a mess of trouble. We call it bad medicine.
So long, kids.
See you Friday.
Open your mouth and shut your eyes. In Kellogg's Variety Pack, there's a grand surprise. Yes, with Variety Pack, you get all your favorite Kellogg's cereals, 10 generous servings, each individually packaged, fresh to you. You can take your pick of Kellogg's Corn Flakes, Rice Krispies, Kellogg's Raisin Bran, Sugar Frosted Flakes, and many other kinds. Open your mouth and shut your eyes. When you choose from Kellogg's Variety Pack, you'll get a grand surprise. Get Kellogg's Variety Pack today. Kellogg's, the greatest name in cereals, has brought you another exciting story of Wild Bill Hickok, starring Guy Madison and Andy Devine in person. Today's cast included Lou Merrill, Jess Kirkpatrick, Sid Mason, and Jack Moyles. Our director is Paul Pierce, story by Larry Hayes, music by Dick Arant. This is a David Heyer production, transcribed in Hollywood. Now, this is Charlie Lyon speaking for Kellogg's, the greatest name in cereals, reminding you to listen again on Friday, same time, same station, for another adventure of
Wild Bill Hickok!
Wild Bill working out a deal there in the Gunsmoke Blockade, starring Guy Madison and Andy Devine as one of the more prominent sidekicks in radio and television, Jingles. Our broadcast came from January 6th, 1954. Next up, a real-life couple in the marriage comedy when we return after this. You're listening to old-time radio drama here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Mead Witter Foundation of Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, supporting the activities of the citizens of central and northern Wisconsin, and encouraging your support of Wisconsin Public Radio programming. Support also comes from Mad City Mitsubishi, offering a selection of new and used Mitsubishi cars, trucks, and SUVs at their new facility at 920 Ann Street and online at madcitymitsubishi.com.
They were a well-respected theater couple, made some movies too, especially late in life, Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy, real-life married couple, with, for a time, a radio series called The Marriage. And tonight, we get into painting the apartment, which can lead to all kinds of intricacies and difficulties. And there are a few of them on top of that in this broadcast of The Marriage from January 3rd, 1954.
Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin in The Marriage. With the conviction that marriage remains the most popular domestic arrangement between friendly people, NBC takes pleasure in presenting one of the most distinguished couples of the American theater, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin, as Liz and Ben Marriott, bringing you the love and laughter of The Marriage.
Change is a very important thing in marriage. It's difficult to put your finger on the exact moment when it becomes necessary for survival. That point when security degenerates into monotony. There are a number of danger signs to look out for. A sudden excessive use of garlic in the cooking. The discarding of a gray Homburg in favor of a light green pork pie. In the Marriott household now, the storm warnings weren't so clear. It started one night when Emily was on the telephone with a friend of hers, and Liz and I were in the living room trying not to listen.
Oh, but Ellie, I'll die. I'll absolutely die.
Oh, no. Sounds critical, doesn't it?
Ben, she'll hear you.
But I've already got a date. Oh, Ellie, I'll die. Huh? Well, then what'll I tell Bobby?
Again?
Well, then what can I tell Arthur? Well, I can't tell them the same thing. They're both on the basketball team. You know how boys are in the locker room.
Liz, how are boys in the locker room?
Now, Ben, that's not fair.
But that's devastating. Catastrophic.
What adjectives would those kids have left if they had to describe an earthquake? Every little crisis is the end of the world.
Shh, read your book.
All right. That lamp on the end table is about 6 inches too far away. It throws a shadow.
Hmm. Yes, you're right. The table should be over further to the left.
All right, if you lean forward.
Well, let's try it.
What?
Moving the end table over 6 inches.
Now?
Why not?
Okay. Which way?
Your left.
There?
He walks. Well, of course he does. What else do you expect from an adolescent?
Shall I move it back?
Oh, no, no, no. The end table's all right.
That's good.
The couch is off center.
Now, Liz, you're not going to start moving the couch tonight.
Well, it's only 6 inches.
Okay. Okay.
Well, then he asked me if I thought a sweater was too personal a present for a girl.
Say when?
Well, I told him it depended on the girl.
This couch is upholstered in foam lead.
There, there, that's right.
Say, is it hot in here?
No, not very.
You mean move it back?
No, it isn't the couch. It's the picture. It's off balance.
Well, I like it that way. It's unusual. An asymmetrical composition.
Off balance.
Oh, darling, you don't want to move it now. We can't bang on the wall at this hour.
Just try it, dear.
I just kept my big mouth shut.
Well, I'm going to wear my new matador pants. Oh, you saw them. I know they do. They're supposed to. I'll just have to be careful.
Hold it a little higher, Ben.
There. All right?
Fine. I didn't realize the walls were that dirty.
They're not dirty. They're just aged.
Ben, do you like stark white?
Stark white what?
Walls.
Well, I've never given them much thought.
Bye now. Hey, what's going on in here?
Oh, it all started in a moment of insanity when I remarked that the lamp was 6 inches too far away. It was devastating, even catastrophic. I could die. I could just die.
Oh, Daddy. I'm sorry. I moved the lamp before supper when I was knitting. I see you moved it back where it was in the first place.
You mean it's all a mistake? We can move everything back? Just forget the whole thing?
Ben. Think about stark white.
I thought about stark white all the next day, and by evening when I arrived home, I was slightly snowblind. Outside the apartment door, I caught a strange aroma. Wasn't anything cooking, but it was vaguely familiar.
It's turpentine, dear. I was thinning the paint.
What paint?
The white. It wasn't stark enough.
What is that you're wearing? A pup tent?
Coveralls. It's the ceiling that's the hard part.
You're not painting the ceiling.
Uh-huh. It's easy. You use a roller.
Liz, this is crazy. For one thing, the landlord's supposed to paint. It's in the sanitary code.
I'm not going to wait for you to sue him and carry the case up to the Supreme Court.
But it's a matter of principle. You know, this is a fight to the finish.
All right. I surrender. I want the walls clean. Now, Ben, I've got to get Pete off to bed early. They're bringing the machine at 6:30.
What machine?
The floor scraper.
But I don't know anything about floor scraping.
Oh, that's all right, dear. I do.
Oh, well, then I suppose it's a good idea.
And Ben, don't worry about helping with the painting. I don't want to upset you at all.
Thank you, dear.
I know you're busy all day, so I won't bother you.
Thank you, dear.
Besides, the rubber base paint looks awful unless you know what you're doing.
Liz spent the whole evening on a ladder with white paint running down her arm into her sleeve as she painted the ceiling. I tried to be helpful, handing her brushes and rags, but she sent me into the kitchen about 9 o'clock to think about charcoal gray for the bathroom. I considered charcoal gray seriously until 10:30, and then I went to bed. I could tell when Liz finally turned in at midnight because of the delicate scent of turpentine that she wafted in with her. The next day, I called her from the office at about 3 p.m.
Ben, if you've got a few minutes this afternoon, think about apple green for the bedroom.
Yes, dear, I'll put one of the law clerks onto it.
I pulled the fixtures off the wall in the dinette.
How did it happen? Were you hurt?
No, I did it on purpose. I'm putting in indirect lighting.
Oh. Look, Liz, I've got a brief to get out tonight.
Your desk is in Pete's room.
It is? Well, I guess I better stay down here tonight. Midnight? Why not?
I varnished the floor inside the front door.
An office building's a strange place at night. As lonely as a country graveyard, with the strange cries of the cleaning ladies echoing through the empty halls. I worked on Slattery versus the Incorporated Village of Tarrytown until about 11, and then I decided to knock off. As I went out, I noticed that there was a light on in an office down at the end of the hall. I went over to the elevator and punched the down button. The light went out down the hall and the door opened. It was a girl. Young girl, sort of small, with a Scotch plaid coat pulled in tight at the waist. I glanced sideways at her and then studied the elevator indicator over the door. It stayed glued to the B at the bottom of the dial. We just stood and waited for a while.
You don't get irritated when you wait, do you?
I beg your pardon?
I get absolutely furious when I have to wait for an elevator. As if it were staying down purposely because it's me. You don't. I was watching you.
Oh, no, I suppose I don't. Charlie's probably mopping up one of the floors.
I never would have thought of that. You're in the law firm down the hall, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Can a landlord evict a tenant for sharing the apartment with a girlfriend?
Well, what kind of tenant?
Me.
I'd have to see the lease. Here comes the elevator.
Oh, it's because you're here. If it was only me, it wouldn't come for ages.
Something personal between you and Charlie?
No, it's the elevator. It's easier waiting with someone.
Go ahead.
Thank you. You saved me hours. Well, good night.
Good night. I guess we're going the same way.
I guess so.
I was going into the drugstore for a cup of coffee.
So was I.
Well, after you.
Thanks.
Well, good night.
Good night.
I climbed up on a stool at one end of the counter and she perched at the other end. I fiddled with a napkin and looked through the papers I was carrying, trying not to stare at her. She was a striking girl. Her hair was very long and sort of rippled down her back. She smiled at me and I turned away as if I'd been caught stealing the jam pot.
Well, what'll it be, Chief?
Coffee, please. Black.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? A sandwich? Hamburger?
Just coffee.
Uh-huh. One cup of Jamal. Here you are.
Thank you.
Pretty girl, huh?
Hmm. Oh, I suppose so.
Yeah, she has a fresh white-eyed beauty.
Yeah, I guess she has.
You came in together, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. What does that mean?
Well, there she is at that end, and here you are way down here.
Well, what's wrong with the arrangement?
Look. Leaning on a counter all night, you get to learn about life, you know. You get to know people, the little people. I've had this situation before.
What situation?
Well, you know, late at night, boy and a girl come in, afraid of tearing her eye. They sit down.
Now, wait a minute. You've got this all wrong.
Yeah, but they're worlds apart. See, they'd quarrel.
Look, I don't know the girl. I hardly speak to her.
You should be ashamed. She wouldn't discard you that way like an old shoe.
If it's okay with you, all I want is a cup of coffee. No philosophy, eh?
Oh. Well, you heard about me, huh?
Are you famous?
Oh, sure. I've been in the newspapers. Archie the Short Order Socrates. I got the clipping right here.
Well. That's very interesting.
Hey, you want to read what Walter Winchell wrote about me?
Not particularly.
Oh. Well, how about Earl Wilson? I got a real great write-up from Earl Wilson.
All I wanted was the coffee.
Oh. Hey, look. I'll tell her you're sorry.
Never mind.
Yeah, I'll tell her you want to apologize.
Look, all right, now just...
You've got it all wrong.
Excuse me, miss.
Hey, miss, he's sorry. He wants to sit next to you.
I do not. I mean...
I think he's very understanding. It was a silly quarrel, darling. Please sit next to me.
What was that?
There, ain't that better? Yeah, I'll bring you coffee down here, Chief.
Look, I'm terribly sorry.
Come on, don't disappoint him. He feels so philanthropic bringing two lovers together again.
Seems that He feels he has to live up to his press notices.
Oh, are they reviewing drugstores now?
Apparently. Atkinson in the Times said that he had a deft hand with a hamburger, but his malted bogged down in the second act.
Well, here's your coffee. Huh? Say, do you mind if I mention this little vignette to Ed Sullivan if he comes in?
Not at all. Just spell my name right. Smith, with an I.
Smith with an I, sure. Well, I'll leave you two alone now.
Well, hello, Mr. Smith.
I'm really Marriott. Ben Marriott. With two T's.
Oh, I'm Judy Cantor. I do layouts for the fountain pen company. Do you think I should give it up?
I don't know. Why?
I should be spending all my time studying. I took the job because I thought I could save up enough to go to Paris. Do you think I ought to keep up or just accept fountain pen layouts?
I don't know. I suppose it depends on how strongly you want to... Well, whatever it is you want.
You know... Nobody's ever put it that clearly before.
I think studying art is just an excuse that gets people to Paris. And then they go back home again, never quite satisfied with, well, wherever it was they came from.
Well, you've been there?
Just during the war. Even then, with hungry kids and black marketing, there was, a sense of life, of gaiety, a wonderful, astonishing... Well, whatever it was, I hated to leave. Oh, I really ought to be going home. No, let me take care of it.
Oh, thank you. Well, I suppose we should walk out arm in arm or the counterman will be heartbroken.
Oh.
Get something?
Yes. Neosinephrine drops. My son has a stuffed nose. I came up for air on the subway going home. There was a strange, disturbing quality about that girl. She looked straight in your eye with a look of absorbed interest. Of course, she might have been nearsighted and too vain to wear her glasses, but that didn't occur to me at the time. I started to tell Liz about the short order Socrates, but I didn't get very far.
Did you think about Apple Green?
I only had a few minutes during supper, darling, but I thought about it very hard.
I don't like it. I think Elephant Gray.
Liz, a funny thing happened to me tonight. I ran into a girl waiting for the elevator. Very odd girl. I can't quite figure her out.
Well, that's nice, dear. Hand me that rag. The enamel drips on the floor.
You see, I was working late, and the elevator took a long time coming up.
Ben, do you mind telling me later? I've got to concentrate. If I drip white enamel on the gray wall, I'll never get it off.
Okay.
Don't be sulky.
I'm not sulky. I'm tired.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, it almost dripped. Go to bed, dear. You can tell me about the funny thing in the morning.
Somehow, it didn't seem so funny in the morning. I was late, and I'd have had to tell the whole story to Liz from the beginning. And she was obviously thinking about, I don't know, eggshell off-white or something. So I didn't say anything. Slattery versus the incorporated village of Tarrytown turned out to be more work than I expected. And I had to work late at the office for the rest of the week. Wednesday and Thursday nights, I ran into Judy Cantor at the elevator. We stopped at the drugstore each night for coffee. Friday night, I finished work early, but I just sat around for a while thinking. I suppose it was the sound of the elevator coming up that brought me out of it. At least, that's what I told myself at the time. She was just getting in the car when I came out into the hall. Down! Hello.
Hello, Ben.
Ooh. Funny thing. I was through with my work 20 minutes ago, but I just sat at my desk daydreaming.
So did I. But I didn't hear your door, so I started home anyway.
We didn't want coffee that night, so we walked across the little park triangle to the subway. It was a lovely, clear night. One of those cold, crisp nights with no wind blowing so you could stop and just breathe it in. I was pointing out Orion to her.
Ooh.
What is it?
Caught my heel.
Ooh.
Are you all right?
My ankle twisted a little.
Here, sit down on the bench.
No, it's all right.
Go ahead, sit down.
Ooh. It'll be all right soon.
Are you sure? Boy.
It's like drinking ice water, isn't it?
The kind of night that belongs with fir trees on a mountainside. It's out of place hanging over Lower Broadway.
Mm.
Something very, very incandescent about a night like this. I'm being foolish, aren't I?
Oh, don't spoil it. Men are always ashamed of a poetic thought. You shouldn't be.
Well, it certainly is a marvelous night.
I painted this once. I tried to make it look like a cold night. That's hard if you don't cheat and use snow. I wish you could see it. I'd like you to.
Oh, I'd like to. Well, I suppose we'd better get going. Can you walk?
It's all right.
I tell you what, I'll take a cab home, drop you off on the way.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Oh, it's no trouble. Here, let me give you a hand.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It does hurt a little. I think it's very nice of you to come up.
Oh, well, only because it's a walk-up. I was afraid of that ankle.
It's all right now. Well, here we are. I'm 2C.
Yeah. Well, I finished that case I was working on.
I knew you would.
I guess I won't be working nights for a while.
Well, it was nice just knowing there was somebody else on the floor.
Did seem more friendly, didn't it?
Won't you come inside?
Well, it's pretty late.
Oh, I'd like you to see my work. I want to know what you think of it.
I shouldn't, Judy.
Oh, it's all right, really.
Judy? Hey!
Oh, my roommate's here. Hey, Sherry, are you dressed? You've got company.
I'm crying out loud. Wait on. Okay.
Come on. This is my roommate, Sherry.
Hiya.
Come on in.
How do you do? Maybe I better go.
Oh, no, please come in. It's all right. Hey, Judy, he called.
Sid, what did he say about Alice?
Well, you know Alice. That makes two boys I've got for the dance. What can I tell him? I'll just die.
It's catastrophic, all right.
Murder, the worst.
Maybe I better be going on. It's a little late, you know.
Oh, that's all right. Boys are always staying late. It's okay as long as we're both here.
Well, unlike the other boys, I should be getting home. Very nice to meet you, Miss...
Oh, wait a minute, Ben. Sherry, this is what I was talking about. The lawyer.
Oh, I'll get it out of the drawer.
I beg your pardon?
The lease.
I knew you wouldn't mind, Ben. You see, I rented the room, and now the landlord says I can't have Sherry here. He says there's something in the lease about subletting.
Oh. Oh. It's something about a lease, eh?
Oh, I thought you wouldn't mind. You're the only lawyer I knew.
I see. Well, sure, I'll look over the lease.
Here it is. Ben, I just don't understand these things. If I can't have Sherry here, I won't be able to make the rent. It's devastating. I'll just die. I'll absolutely die.
I looked at the lease. It was devastating and catastrophic. I rendered the opinion that the landlord was right and fled. She stood in the doorway and waved to me as I went down the stairs. She was pretty. Pretty and graceful. Her long hair all tangled. But I went down those stairs two at a time, pursued by the echo of the giggles and the horrible quality of unadulterated youth. On the subway, going home, I held a particularly painful session of self-analysis. When I got home, I found Liz waiting up for me. The painting was done. The paint-stained coveralls were gone.
Well, how do you like it, darling?
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Oh, I meant the walls.
Oh, well, they're beautiful, too.
You had a rough time this week, I'm afraid.
In a way.
You know, darling, even with the paint and the varnish and the turpentine, I miss you.
I miss you, too.
I think I know how much I missed you now.
Well, it's all over.
Yes, you're right, it is. You have no idea how glad I am to get home.
It's nice to have you. Recognize what I'm wearing?
Your birthday, last year. You never wore it before.
I was waiting for an occasion. Sit down, darling. I'll get you some coffee.
No. No, you just stay right here.
I suppose I feel guilty neglecting you this week.
Well, I feel a little guilty myself.
Tell me, how was your week? Anything interesting happen?
Well,
Anything important?
No, nothing important.
Oh, that's too bad. Comfortable, darling?
Very comfortable.
Ben and Liz Marriott will be back in a moment. In the meantime, let us extend an invitation on behalf of our stars, Jessica Tandy and Doom Cronin, as well as the National Broadcasting Company, to all of you to drop by next week at this time for another half-hour observation and transcription of The Marriage, written by Ernest Tenoy. Denise Alexander played Emily, Ann Sargent was heard as Judy, Larry Haynes as Archie, and Sherita Bauer as Sheriff. The Marriage is an NBC Radio Network production directed by Edward King. This is Bob Denton speaking.
Ben?
Mm-hmm?
You know, the bureau is about 6 inches too far to the right.
Is it now? I know just what to do, darling.
You do?
Yeah. I'll saw it off. Good night, Liz.
Good night, darling.
The Marriage, and an episode about Liz painting the apartment, but of course, so much more goes on. In that story, which starred, as the series did, Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy. Our broadcast came from January 3rd, 1954. Here's another couple, which had its adventures and misadventures, mostly in the latter category, the Bickersons.
Like being married to a hot rod. What is it, John? What are you laughing at?
What are you laughing at? What's the matter? Hmm?
You're giggling like a tickled schoolgirl. What are you dreaming about?
Tickling schoolgirl.
What?
What's the matter, Blanche? What did you wake me up for?
Do you know what time it is?
No.
It's 3:30, and you've been snoring steadily since 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock? I didn't go to bed till 11.
No, but you fell asleep at the dinner table tonight, right in the middle of dessert.
Ugh.
I think you deliberately fell asleep to avoid talking to me anyway.
No. I had a very tough day. I'm dead on my feet.
You never talk to me, John. Actually, you haven't said anything since you proposed to me.
I think I said too much then.
You're not the only one who regrets it, you know.
I don't regret it. I'm just sleepy.
I don't need a building to fall on my head. I can tell by your attitude. You're not even pleasant when you're not sleepy.
Are you?
Yes, I am. Generally speaking.
You certainly are. Generally speaking.
You see, you're the one who always starts everything.
I'm sorry.
Sure, it's easy to say you're sorry now.
No, it isn't.
From the first day I met you, I've done nothing but suffer. You've always been a conceited, selfish, inconsiderate, lazy brute.
Then why did you marry me?
I didn't know it then.
You did, too. Everybody knew it.
I could cry when I think of the way you treated me. First time I cooked a stew for you, the cat ate it up before you got home. I was brokenhearted, but did you offer me any sympathy?
I got your new cat, didn't I?
But cat didn't die until a month later. It wasn't from my cooking. You kept putting bourbon in her milk.
Bourbon never hurt anybody.
It killed the cat.
That's because she mixed it with milk. I begged her to drink it straight. I want to sleep.
It amazes me that you can sleep at all with your guilty conscience.
What have I done now?
How could you, John?
How could I what?
How could you forget that it's my birthday next week?
Oh, Blanche, this is really getting silly. You'd better see a psychiatrist.
That kind of talk won't help you, John. You're just trying to make me forget. You forgot to remember not to forget my birthday.
There must be a simpler way of saying that.
You might at least have bought me a present.
I did buy a present. It'll be delivered on your birthday. I'm having your name engraved on it.
What is it?
It's a genuine imitation alligator traveling bag.
Traveling bag. Last year you got me a cosmetic set. And the year before that you got me a set of encyclopedias. It isn't hard to see what you're thinking.
What am I thinking?
I'm stupid, I'm ugly, and you want to get rid of me.
I never heard of such a thing in all my life.
That is true, isn't it? I'm stupid, I'm ugly, and you want to get rid of me.
I do not want to get rid of you.
But I'm stupid and ugly.
I didn't say that.
But you think it of me.
I never think of you at all.
Don't yell at me. You're giving me that dreadful pain again.
What pain?
Oh, nothing.
Are you sick again? What pain? What are you talking about?
It's my head. I've had it off and on for the last 3 weeks.
Take it off now and go to sleep.
What you care about me? I'm warning you, John Biggs, and I won't touch your cheap old present.
It's a beautiful bag, and it set me back $8.
You know how I've been longing for some new clothes. Why don't you get your $8 back, add a little money to it, and buy me an ermine wrap?
Add a little money to it? Do you know how much an ermine wrap costs?
Mel Shaw bought one for Louise.
What do I care? I can't afford suspenders, so how can I buy you an ermine wrap?
Mel Shaw makes less than you do, and he buys Louise ermine wraps and still manages to dress Natalie.
Natalie who?
You know what I mean. I want an ermine wrap.
You can't have an ermine wrap. You'll take the bag and like it.
Where will I travel with it?
I swear, as soon as I have enough in the bank, I'm going to send you on a trip around the world.
Maybe I don't want to go there.
Go where?
Around the world. Suppose I want to go someplace else. Besides, you'd probably send me on one of those horrid old banana boats with a lot of convicts rowing it. Anything to get me out of your sight.
I'm not sending you on a banana boat.
I can see the boat getting caught in the storm. A wave will wash me into the ocean. I'm going down for the third time, and you're cruising by in your luxury liner.
Blanche.
Why don't you throw me a life belt, John?
Why don't you stop getting hysterical, Blanche? It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I've got to get some sleep.
You'd have been asleep hours ago if it hadn't been for your snoring.
Well, can I help it if I snore?
Yes, you can. Dr. Hersey says you snore because you don't get enough exercise.
Dr. Hersey.
He says you should play golf or badminton.
Okay, I'll start next week.
You say it, but you won't do it. Do it now. Go on, get up and play badminton.
Boy, are you out of your mind? Who can I play with at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Call your girlfriend, Gloria Gooseby.
Oh, now don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
You'd love to play badminton with her if she was willing.
She's always willing and we never play badminton. Anything with Gloria Gooseby, and I forbid you to mention her name again.
Oh, hush up and go to sleep.
Sure, go to sleep, she tells me. Works me into a frenzy with bananas and badminton. Hates my present.
Now she tells me, go to sleep.
Sure. I'll never sleep. Another wink as long as I...
The telephone, answer it.
Hello.
Go to the phone and answer
it. No. Never thought to fail at the minute. Out! Hello.
This is the phone company troubleshooter. Did your telephone ring all right?
What?
The wires are down in your neighborhood and we're trying to trace the break. Can you hear me?
Huh?
Will you please say something to me and say it loud?
Drop dead! I never heard of such a thing. That wasn't the phone company. That's a plot. Everybody wants to keep me awake.
Nobody wants to keep you awake, dear. Don't get upset.
Don't get upset.
John. Can I have something else instead of the bag?
If they haven't engraved it yet. What do you want?
I'd like the money instead. I need it for the rent.
Rent? There's $90 in the cookie jar.
No, there isn't.
There's two. I looked yesterday.
You didn't look today.
Oh, now, Blanche, don't tell me that...
I didn't spend it foolishly. I bought Christmas cards.
$90 worth of Christmas cards? What kind of insanity is that? I can't afford to throw away $90 on Christmas cards.
Don't scream at me.
I deny myself everything. I cut my own hair. I nailed rubber heels on my socks to save on shoes. My shorts look like lace curtains. And she squanders $90 on Christmas cards.
They're not for my own use. I'm going into business. I bought them for 5 cents a dozen, and I can get a quarter apiece for them.
5 cents a dozen? Let me see those cards.
They're lovely. They all have a pretty design, and I'll sell them like hotcakes. Here, look at this one. Read the poetry on it.
Let me say it. Season's greetings. Christmas comes but once a year, and so let's hoist our cup of cheer. I hope that you'll hear soon from Santy. Merry Christmas, dearest Auntie. Well, that's crummy. Let me see another one.
They're all the same.
All the same? 20,000 cards all for an aunt? There aren't that many aunts in the world.
I knew you'd pick on me. All I'm trying to do is make a little extra money so I don't have to ask you for it. You keep telling me how poor we are.
So you're just making us poor. How could you throw away the rent money on such a stupid investment?
Well, maybe I made a mistake. I'm sorry, John.
Oh, what's the use? Forget it and go to sleep.
Go to sleep, he tells me. I make his life miserable. Throw away his hard-earned money. Keep him awake all hours of the night. Go to sleep, he tells me. I'll never sleep another wink as long as I...
And she complains about my snoring.
John N. Blanche, the Bickersons, working things out, at least for a little while, in a little episode about a birthday present. Next up, it's Life with Luigi, the experience of coming to America, writ large, in comedy, when old-time radio drama continues after this on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join the conversation by emailing ideas at WPR.org and like us on Facebook at the Ideas Network.
Well, it's cold in January in the big city, and tonight Uncle Pietro needs an overcoat. We also get to listen in on the language class, a regular feature of Life with Luigi, and of course a vehicle for some good word bending. Sheldon Leonard playing, as he so often did, the tough guy, trying to do a little fencing of a hot coat, and all of it wrapped up in Life with Luigi. Our broadcast comes from January 3rd, 1950.
We invite you to enjoy Life. Life with Luigi, a new comedy show created by Cy Howard and starring that celebrated actor, Mr. J. Carroll Nash, with Alan Reed as Pasquale. When Luigi Basco left Italy to start his new life in America, he promised his mother that he would write and tell her about his adventure. So now let's read Luigi's letter as he writes to Mama Basco in Italy.
Dear Mamma Mia, this is the first letter I'm going to write to you in 1950. Happy New Year, Mamma Mia. 1950. Seems like yesterday I'm going to get off a boat in New York and a manager sold me the Chrysler building. Later, when I told this to Pasquale, he was getting very mad at me. He said it was bad to buy real estate when the prices is going down. Anyway,
Hello, Mr. Basco. Letter for you.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Mailman. Hey, is it from my mom?
Yes, she sent it in mail this time.
Well, it must have been important. Maybe Uncle Pietro's goat is finally got the man.
Well, so long, Mr. Basco.
Yeah, goodbye. Dear son Luigi, thanks for all those nice Christmas presents. Aunt Margarita, thanks to you for a glass of coffee maker, which she's broke yesterday. Cousin Maria, thanks to you for nice perfume, which your cat is spill all over himself. Luigi, That the cat is a smeller so nice, and now all the mice that they come to him. Also, Uncle Pietro, he's to say thank you very much for that very fancy American coat to hang on. But the Luigi, Uncle Pietro, is a got no coat. Oh, would it break your heart if you could see him go to work this cold winter morning? All he's got to wear is a shirt, a jacket, and a hot water bottle. Luigi, maybe you know some rich millionaire who's got an extra overcoat that would fit to your Uncle Pietro. He's wear size 36 or size 38, even a 40. And if you know somebody who's got a 42, 44, take off. Then Uncle Pietro could also cover the goat. I'm hoping this letter is to find you healthy and happy in America. Tanto amore, mamma. Poor Uncle Pietro, if I only had a summer coat, I could send him. Wait, maybe there's somebody in my dad's school class who's a gossip. I'm going to go there right now and ask.
Quiet, class. Quiet, please. That's good. I'll call the roll. Mr. Basco?
Here.
Mr. Horowitz?
Yeah.
Mr. Olson?
Yes.
Mr. Schultz?
Guilty.
Mr. Schultz, what do you mean, guilty?
I didn't do my homework. But please, Miss Spalding, you gotta excuse me. It's the first time this year.
Well, naturally, this is the first school day of the new year.
Oh, what a coincidence. Well, thank you, fellow boobies.
Oh, never mind that, Mr. Schultz. Now, class, today our lesson is on spelling, and we are going to review the rules for forming plurals. Now, we all know that one of a thing is called the singular. Now, Mr. Horowitz, if there are two, it's called...
Marriage.
No, Mr. Horowitz, we're talking about plurals. Could you tell me the plural of the word mouse?
With pleasure. Mice.
Mice, that's good.
Not in my house.
Quiet, please. Mr. Schultz, since you're so anxious to talk, answer these questions. Now, what is the plural of deer?
Deer.
Sheep.
Sheep.
Swine.
Shrine.
Mr. Schultz got all three wrong. Why?
To tell the truth, I was leaving myself for the jackpot question.
That is not so funny. Now, Mr. Basco, you may tell us the plurals of deer, sheep, and swine.
Huh?
Tell us the plurals of deer, sheep, and swine.
Huh? Oh, animals.
No, I'm talking about number.
Size 36, 38, to 42.
Mr. Basco, what are you talking about?
Uncle Pietro, he's a cold, do you see?
Mr. Basco, not now.
Miss Spalding, if you wish, I would be overjoyed to give you the rule for the plural. Miss Spalding, you know how dependable I am. Always with the information on the tip of my tongue.
Oh, and why don't you sneeze and bite off your brain?
The simple spelling rule covering the plural says that when the singular ends in a sound with which F cannot unite in pronunciation, but must form a separate syllable, E is inserted before S in forming the plural, unless the word ends with a silent E, which then forms a separate syllable with the S. Now, Schultz, what can be simpler than that?
For one thing, Einstein's theory of relativity.
Mr. Olson, you quoted that rule perfectly. Now, let us see if the class has learned anything. Mr. Basco, can you give us an example?
Huh?
Give us an example.
Huh. 22 is a 4. Now, there's a man we can all understand.
Mr. Basco, have you studied your lesson for today?
Oh, yes, Miss Spalding, but
But I'm keep thinking about what my mom is writing to me about Uncle Pietro. How he's in it overcoat to keep him warm this winter. And I'm got the nothing to send him.
Oh, well, oh that's
strange. Wait, Luigi. I got an old overcoat for you.
Oh, thanks, Horowitz.
Oh, wait, I forgot. It's filled with moth holes.
That's all right. I'm sewed up.
Also, the buttons are missing.
Well, I'm sewed that up, too.
Oh, I just remembered. My wife's brother is wearing the coat.
Him we can't sew up.
Oh, Luigi, I have an idea that you're the Yim Dandy. Why don't you go to the Salvation Army?
Yes, that might be fine, Mr. Basco. You know, it's a very worthwhile organization.
Well, it's right, I tried.
Look, stop. Don't do it, Luigi. You're better off to go to Pasquale's than the Salvation Army.
Sure, so what do you mean?
When I first came here, I went to the Salvation Army. I went inside for a meal. And in 10 minutes, I was wearing a uniform, swinging a tambourine, beating a drum, and singing, "Your mother still waits for you, Jack."
Luigi, my friend.
Hello, Luigi. Hello, hello.
Hello, Pasquale. Pasquale, I'm going to ask you a big favor about something.
There's no rush, little banana nose. Hey, sit down by this table. The best of my spaghetti palace. Maybe you want I should bring you out of some pizza?
No thanks, Pasquale.
The spaghetti is delicious.
No thanks, Pasquale.
Then how's about some lasagna? Tasted like it was made in heaven.
No.
I know. A beautiful filet mignon steak with a French fried potatoes is just a melt into your mouth.
That I'll have.
That I ain't got.
All right, then I'll have the lasagna.
I ain't got that either.
Then why are you asking me if I'm a want?
Just to try to be sociable, a little pumpkin ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Pasquale. But with all this talk about food, I'm a fool already. What I'm really coming in for is a favor. Pasquale, you see my Uncle Pietro, he's got no warm clothes and I'm like it very much.
Luigi, go no further. Come with me in the back of the store. Oh, you're a lucky fellow, Luigi. You got a nice and rich friend like a Pasquale. I'm always a flush. Clothes and money, stocks and bonds, all the four.
That's right, Pasquale. You biggest four flusher I know.
That's the funny thing. When I'm saying it, you come out a different. Well, Luigi, as to my wardrobe. Now, close your eyes, and when you open up, you're going to see a sight you never saw before.
Mamma mia. He's looking like a whole department store.
That's right. Feel that coat over there. That's really suspensive. It's what they call a camel's hair.
Camel's hair? You mean they make a coat from a camel?
Sure, what do you think? They make only cigarettes? They make coats from lots of animals. Beavers, muckrats, minxes. And they make the suits from a fishes, too.
Fishes?
Sure. Didn't you ever have a shark skin? And look, Luigi, look at that suit over there. That's a herring bone.
Mamma mia, there's so much to learn.
Sure. Just look at this closer, Luigi. All the camel's hair.
Pasquale, maybe you think I'm a stupid. But it's the first time I've found out the camel's has got a button.
Look, Luigi, is there 23 suits and a coat in this closet? I'm no greedy. For your Uncle Pietro, take any one you want.
Oh, Pasquale, you're so kind. I'm going to take this camel's coat. You're really good, man.
That's all right, Luigi. I'm glad to do you a favor.
Thank you, Pasquale.
Luigi, I did you a favor. Now maybe you're going to do me a little favor.
Sure, Pasquale. What the favor you want?
Marry my daughter, Rosa. Well, Luigi, what do you say?
Camilla gets her back in the closet.
Oh,
And now, for the second act of Luigi Basco's Adventures in Chicago, we turn to page 2 of his letter to his mother in Italy.
And so, Mamma Mia, I'm very sorry to write to you. I'm still got an overcoat to send Uncle Pietro. I'm looked into my closet, but Mamma Mia, what's the use to look? If a moth was trapped in my closet, he would starve to death. Poor Uncle Pietro. That's the kindest man that ever lived. Remember when I was a little boy, Mamma Mia? I was nothing to eat in a house. Papa was had no money. We was starving. Suddenly, in is walked Uncle Pietro with two chickens. There we was sitting around a table. You, me, Papa, Uncle Pietro, and the two hungry chickens. Uncle Pietro is no had the heart to kill them. So it look like a bad news.
Luigi, my fellow boobie.
Hello, Sergio.
Oh, Luigi, you look so beat, like a real poop cop. The smile, be like my coffee pot. Pick up. What am I talking about? Coffee is $1 a pound.
Sure, I'm asking Pasquale for a quarter, but he said there's nothing to do unless I'm a Mary Rosa.
Oh, that Pasquale. Anything he gives away ain't got strings attached. It's got a noose. Just what did he say, Luigi?
Well, he said if I'm a Mary Rosa, he's giving me one of a 23 clothes. Anyone. Even a minxes with the buttons and a fishes that's a make a suits from a little herons.
Oh, Luigi, are you for shimmers?
Mother Schultz, what am I gonna do?
Well, Luigi, you could go to a pawn shop dealer.
Pawn shop dealer, what's that?
He's a fellow that makes a living from people who are broke.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, he lives on the flat of the land.
Sure, so you think there's a porter shop of fellas are going to sell me a coat?
Why not? How much money you got to spend, Luigi?
$3.
Himmels, $3?
But it's just that $3 enough to buy old overcoats?
For $3, you couldn't buy an old sweatshirt.
No, wait, Luigi. Into my head, an idea just pooped.
Those pawnbrokers, they make a lot of money on those old coats, you know. Why don't you go out and buy one the same as they do?
But the house should...
You go around in backyards and you holler, I cash clothes, any old clothes. Now, Luigi, let me hear you say that.
I cash clothes, any old clothes. Sure, so then what do the people to do?
They throw down milk bottles. No, smile, Luigi. I'm only trying to cheer you up. From the whole neighborhood, somebody is bound to have one old coat he wants to get rid of, and there you are.
Oh, sure, so you really like the same.
Sure, and twice as sweet. Well, Luigi, I gotta go now. Goodbye, and cheer up. Remember, be like me, always smiling, happy, laughing. Oh, my rheumatism is killing me.
All the clothes, I'm a cashier. I'm a cashier, all the clothes.
Luigi, what are you celebrating about? The New Year's was 3 days ago.
But sorry, I'm a don't need your help. But Schultz has just given me a wonderful idea.
Oh, fine thing. You listen to that delicatessen of the man of Schultz. So what is that going to get you? Nothing. He's got a lesser brains in his little finger than I got in my whole head. Luigi. Look, why you don't stop with this crazy clothes business? Always are you looking to help for somebody else. Help yourself for a change.
But, Pasquale, remember what they say. It's more blessed to give than to receive.
Sure, if you're a price fighter. Look, Luigi, I'm still willing to help you out. I got a 23 garments just itching to jump on you, Uncle Pietro's back. All you gotta do is marry Rosa. What do you say?
No.
Please, Luigi, just the once.
No.
Be sensible. I'm just told Rosa she should do anything to make you happy. You can't be alone all of your life. Even the Lone Rangers have got his horse. So why don't you marry Rosa?
That's glad I don't want a horse.
Luigi,
Please, I'm gonna go now.
Buddy, oh, so he's a walk out of me, eh? Gonna go round and buy an old coat. Oh, if there was only some way I think I know just how to fix that little pup squeak. I'm gonna call the city hall and fix him good. Hello? Give me the business license department. I teach him to turn down on my Rosa. Hello, license department. A certain fella named Luigi Basco is going around the Halstead Street neighborhood buying all the clothes without a license. That's very bad, eh? You going to send out an inspector? Good. Now we see who's going to have the last to laugh. By the time Luigi gets it through, he's going to be happy to stand up for any license. Maybe even a marriage license.
Come, Tasha. All the clothes are hammer, Tasha. She missed me. Well, Uncle Pietro is still in need of that Costa. I'm a cashier. On the clothes.
Hey, look, mister, what do you want? Trouble?
No, lady, overcoat.
You want me to call a cop?
You think he's got the one?
Yes, get up.
I'm a cashier. On the clothes, I'm a cashier. Mama mia, nobody's answering. Maybe I'm a treading in the door. See what's happening. Please, mister, maybe you...
Look, bud, if it's vacuum cleaners, we got one. Magazines I don't read. I got no dough for any charity, and I don't want a chance at a raffle. So what do you want?
Huh? I want all the clothes. Do you got
it? Yeah, and I'm wearing them.
Please, I'm a pet cashier. Maybe you got something that's been old in the house?
Yeah, I have. My mother-in-law, but she's sleeping. Now, don't bother me.
Please, I'm a cashier. Please.
Hey, bud.
Huh?
You, come here. Want to buy a coat?
Sure.
I got just the one for you. This is a great buy. This coat is hot.
Good. My Uncle Pietro, he can use the hot.
It's fine.
Does it cost much money?
Believe me, it's a steal.
Oh, I don't want anything. That's a steal.
Hey, look, Buster, save the jokes, will you? This coat is hot, but it ain't stolen. I got it from a fence.
From a fence?
Why, sure. I get plenty of stuff off of this fence.
You're lucky. I'm a past 100 in the back of yards. I'm going to see one across on any fence.
Hey, look, I ain't got no time to stand around here chewing a rag.
What?
Chewing the rag.
What's the matter? You got a toothache?
Hey, look, you want to buy this coat or not?
Please, I want very much to buy this coat. How much do you want for it?
Three sawbucks
are good. I'm a buy.
It's a deal. Here's the coat.
And thank you. Here's the $3. Please, you saw them yourself.
Hey, stop this wise guy. $3 is $30. Don't you understand English?
Sure, but I'm a guess that maybe was both that went to different night schools.
All right, what do you say? I ain't gonna argue. You got the $30?
What? Wait, please, I'm like to buy, but $30.
What's the matter? Ain't the coat worth it?
Sure, it's a beautiful coat. Soft, warm, nice lining. Big pockets. Hey, how's it possible a coat should have such a big pockets?
Well, the guy who owned this coach used to pack his rods there.
Pack his rods?
Yeah, yeah.
Mamma mia, what a funny place to hang the curtains.
All right, look, break it up, Mac. You don't want to buy.
No, wait. You wasn't one of $30 for the coat then?
Check.
Oh, you take a check, huh?
No, strictly cash.
You mean real money?
Check.
That's what I said.
Why did I ever apply for a parole? Come on, will you hand back the coat?
Hey, you buying old clothes?
Yeah.
I'm a city license inspector.
Uh-oh.
Oh, license?
Well, I hope that you two gentlemen will excuse. I am due to deliver a lecture at the YMCA.
Oh, wait a minute. You're Luigi Basco, aren't you?
Yeah, that's me, yes, sir.
Did you buy this coat from that man?
Not yet.
Well, good. Before you do any more of this buying, you'll have to get a license.
Well, then I can go, Inspector?
Sure.
Well, thank you, Inspector. It gives me a deep sense of gratification to know that we got people like you protecting us, honest, law-abiding citizens. Good day, gentlemen.
Hey, Luigi. Well, I see you come back without a coat. What's the matter? You having a trouble, little pumpkin head?
That's right, please. I'm having so much trouble, I'm going to forget everything.
You want to forget, huh? Luigi, how can you forget that my 23 pieces of clothes are hanging in the closet and your Uncle Pietro freezing to death?
What?
Don't forget those winters in Italy, Luigi. They're mean. Worse than California. Maybe right now, just because of your stubbornness, your Uncle Pietro is laying in a single bed with a double pneumonia.
Please, Pasquale.
Luigi, look, I'm not asking you to make this a bigger sacrifice for my daughter, Rosa. It's for your own frostbitten flesh and blood. Because of you, everybody's probably calling him Uncle Pietro the Human Popsicle. I just think of that picture.
Can I stop, Pasquale, please? I can't face it.
Then I call in a Rosa.
I can't face that either.
Luigi, you've got your choice. Uncle Pietro or Rosa?
That's right. Is a frost or a fat? All right, Pasquale, call her in.
That's what I like, a weakling. Rosa! 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 Yes, my little pie face. Rosa, say hello to Luigi.
Hello, Luigi.
Hello, Rosa.
Rosa, I've got good news for you. Luigi's just asked me to be his father-in-law. You know what that's going to make you?
His mother-in-law.
Oh, shut up your face. Luigi, you're never going to be sorry with her. Only yesterday I was saying to her, Rosa, you do everything possible to make Luigi happy.
And I said I'd do anything, Papa. Luigi, kiss me.
All right, Luigi. Come here, Luigi. Don't run away. Come here. Look, my boy, we're going to go to my closet and you pick out any clothes you want, even the camel's hair. I'm opening up the closet. Where's the coats or the suits? The closet's empty.
Empty?
Yes. Say, what's happened to all of my clothes? Who's responsible for this?
Me, Papa.
You, why?
You told me to do anything for Luigi.
Yes.
So
I said, all your clothes, Uncle Pietro! And so, Mamma Mia, soon Uncle Pietro is going to get to his coat. Not only is he going to have a coat, but also he's going to give one to the mailman, the baker, all of his friends, And maybe even I have one left for the ghosting. Here's a big bundle of clothes coming, Mamma Mia. 23. One favor I'm like to ask you. You see, Mamma Mia, winters, they're very cold here in Chicago. So if Uncle Pietro can spare one of his coats, please, he should send one to me. That's right, the Pasquale can use it. Your loving son, Luigi Basco, the immigrant.
Be sure to listen at Tuesday at the same time over most of these stations when Luigi Basco writes another letter to his Mama Basco telling him his adventures in America. And this letter is one of the most important he has ever written. Because after being in America for over a year, Luigi gets his first citizenship papers. So be with us next Tuesday when Luigi tells about this thrilling experience to his Mama Basco in it. Life of Luigi is a Cy Howard production written by Max Benioff and Lou Derman, directed by Max Benioff, and stars Jake Carroll as Luigi Basco with Alan Reed as the star. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Life with Luigi from January 3rd, 1950. A story about Pietro needing an overcoat. Next up, this is your FBI. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include the UW Health Breast Center and the Fox Valley Symphony. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor.
I'm the Ideas Network Director, Cheryl Gasser, inviting you to check out our new Stronger Signal at 107.9 FM. The Ideas Network, where Wisconsin connects.
Tonight's story is called The Toy Bandit. This is your FBI, mixing kids' play and very serious stuff. This series, by the way, This is Your FBI, was introduced by J. Edgar Hoover. It had, to some extent, his blessing. Tonight's broadcast comes from January 4th, 1952. It's called The Toy Bandit.
This is Your FBI. This is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Tonight, the subject of our FBI file, armed robbery. Its title, The Toy Bandit. Through the years, types of crimes have remained in general the same. There have always been thieves, kidnappers, murderers, blackmailers, and so on. But crime detection methods have advanced rapidly. Science has developed new and more effective techniques for apprehending criminals. Rarely, if ever, are the progressive steps in tracking down a criminal the same. Science supplies your FBI agent with his tools. But the agent himself, as is proved by tonight's case from the FBI files, must have imagination, intelligence, and initiative to know which tools to use and when to use them. That's why the men of your FBI are selected with much painstaking care. Those who finally pass muster command widespread respect and confidence. Tonight's FBI file opens in a wooded area on the outskirts of a large western city. A man sits leaning against the trunk of a tree, fondling an almost empty bottle, as a young boy quietly sneaks up behind him.
Boom, 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 boom!
Huh? Oh, hello, boy.
You're dead. I shot you.
Yeah, no sense wasting bullets.
You can't talk. You're dead.
Oh.
Well, all right. You can be alive again.
Thank you.
There's nobody else around to shoot.
Which gun did you kill me with?
Both of them. I emptied both rocket guns right into you. Wait, I have to fill them again. You're all full.
Wish it was that easy to fill this.
I know what's in there. Dirty old whiskey.
Son, speak kindly of the departed.
I'm a cowboy. I don't drink whiskey. I drink milk.
It's not as good.
My mom says it'll make me big and strong.
Safer drinking this. Whiskey never curdles.
Boom, boom. You're dead again.
Rockets don't go boom. They go...
How do you know? Have you got any rocket guns?
Have any? I am a rocket gun.
You couldn't shoot me.
Then why not?
Cowboys that drink whiskey can't shoot straight. It says so right in my book.
Want me to show you?
I don't want to play like yesterday. You bend your finger and say I'm dead. It's no fair.
You want to play fair? Give me a gun.
You don't know how to shoot a rocket gun.
Yes, I do. I'll take one of yours and hide behind that tree. And you hide here, and we'll sneak up on each other.
You gotta be an Indian.
Ugh.
Okay. Here, use this gun. It's broke.
Thank you. Now, don't peek.
I won't. Don't forget, when you're dead three times, I win.
Okay. Now I'm an Indian.
Ready?
Not yet.
Ready now? Here I come, ready or not. Where's that Indian? I'll shoot you. I'll kill you dead. My rocket gun is loaded. I'm pointing it straight at... Hey, where are you? Mister, where are you? Mister! Mister! He stole my gun.
He did steal the gun and within an hour used it to rob a bank. Minutes after the holdup, the local FBI field office was notified. Special agents Jim Taylor and George Wilson were assigned to the case and went right to work. The first step was to interview the bank teller.
Mr. Butler, can you describe the bandit?
Well, he was about 6 feet tall, kind of thin, about 40 or 45 years old, and he was wearing an old blue jacket and brown pants.
Well, go on, please.
An old brown hat, no tie, and, well, that's about all I remember.
Mm-hmm. Any scars on his face?
No, but he had a pug nose and he needed a shave.
No. What color hair?
Black, I think.
Mm-hmm. Eyes?
I don't remember.
Tell me, did he touch anything during the robbery? Anything he might have left fingerprints on?
No, I handed him the money and he stuffed it into the pockets of his coat.
Do you have serial numbers of any of the stolen bills?
Well, $1,000 worth of the 20s were new. I'll get you the numbers.
Well, that's fine. Now, is there anything else you remember?
Well, he'd been drinking. I could smell his breath 2 feet away.
Was he drunk?
No, he talked too well. Like he was educated.
Oh, what did he say?
Don't be afraid. You don't want any trouble, and neither do I. You've got a lot of money. I don't have any. Hand me some, and I'll put the gun back in my pocket.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you describe the gun?
Well, it was long, had a chromium barrel, and a red handle with some letters scratched on top. Three letters like initials.
Can you remember what those letters were?
I'm afraid not.
Say, it had a long chrome barrel and a red handle.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like maybe it was a toy.
Again.
Oh, hello, George. Mr. Butler, this is Special Agent Wilson.
Oh, how do you brother? Do?
The guard says he ran out after the holdup and saw the bandit.
Did he see the getaway car?
There wasn't any, at least not out front. The bandit ran and disappeared around the corner onto Madison Street.
Oh.
By the time the guard got out there, he was gone.
Mr. Butler here smelled whiskey on his breath.
Madison Street is full of saloons.
Yes, that's right. Well, thanks, Mr. Butler. Come on, George, let's check all of them.
The beginning of every investigation is almost pure routine. An alert was radioed to highway patrolmen. Nearby, police roadblocks were established on every highway. Bus terminals, railroad stations, and airports were watched. The description was teletyped to FBI headquarters. All those things happening while Agents Taylor and Wilson went from saloon to saloon, interviewing waiters, bartenders, porters, every possible person who might have seen the bandits.
Let's try this place, George, huh?
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, man. What'll it be?
We're special agents of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
Okay.
We're looking for a man about 6 feet tall, pug-nosed, black hair. He's wearing a blue jacket and brown pants.
And he might have been out of breath when he came in.
Hey, yeah.
Was he here?
Yeah, about a half hour ago. Huh? Two drinks, no tip.
Where is he?
Oh, he's gone.
Is he a regular customer?
No, never seen him before. Brother, he polishes off double bourbons like they was root beer.
Did he say where he was going?
No, he wasn't gabby. He'd come in, ask him where the washroom was, and he'd come back, polished off his juice and blue.
Why? Who is he?
He held up the savings bank around the corner.
Yeah?
Yeah, he used a toy gun with a long chromium barrel and a red handle.
Well, he's the one who left it.
He left it here?
Yeah, wait a minute. Is this what you mean, I hear?
It looks like it.
The laundry guy found it in the towel hamper, and I kind of had an idea my kid would like it.
Well, if that's the gun we think it is, it's evidence. Maybe see it, please.
You get a receipt, Mom.
Okay, here it is.
Now, here are those letters in the handle, Jim.
Yeah. K-V-Y.
The guy stuck up a bank with a kid's gun? Brother, you gotta hand it to him. That takes guts, huh?
To scare somebody with a gun? Sure, it takes real courage.
Let's get going, George.
The efficiency of a law enforcement organization is determined in large part by the speed with which it can move. For time is a vital element in every case. In this one, while FBI headquarters searched its modus operandi files to see if they contained the name of a bank robber who favored toy guns, while nearby local police were sent all additional information, Special Agents Taylor and Wilson went to the school board and searched the records for a student whose initials were KVY. There was one, named Kenneth Vincent Young. They immediately started for his home.
Should be the next task, George.
Oh. Yeah, it is. There's the name in the mailbox.
Oh. Oh, hello, son.
Slow down, you're both dead.
We didn't know you were shooting at us.
Grown-ups are no fun.
Hey, cowboy, can I see that gun?
No.
Are those your initials on the handle?
I kill every Indian on the block with this gun. I kill him every day.
And you got two holsters there. Where's your other gun?
A man crooked it off me. You want to play cowboys and Indians?
Well, maybe later.
I'm a cowboy.
Well, all the cowboys I know have names.
I've got a name. I'm Cactus Kenny.
Is your whole name Kenneth Vincent Young?
Only in the house with Mom. Out here, I'm Cactus Kenny.
Okay, Cactus, we're FBI agents.
Real ones?
Mm. Sure.
Gee.
We think maybe we can find the man who stole your gun.
Oh, boy. Can I be a G-man instead of a cowboy?
Sure.
And can I still be Cactus Kenny?
Oh, we'll arrange the whole thing. Now tell me, Kenny, do you know the man who took your gun?
Uh-huh. He was the Indian, I was the cowboy.
Hmm. What's his name?
I don't know.
Where does he live?
Oh, down there in that big brown house.
What does he look like?
He's a big man, bigger than my dad used to be.
Where did he steal your gun?
Up the hill by the trees. I snuck around behind him. I was a cowboy. And he was holding a bottle of whiskey. I killed him.
Whiskey?
Sounds like the right man.
Bang, 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 bang!
Hey, you can't shoot us. We're on the same side.
Who can I shoot?
You just hold your powder, Kenny. We'll try to find your old playmate. Well, let's hope Kenny was right about him living here.
Afternoon?
Afternoon, ma'am. We're special agents of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
The FBI.
You're the landlady?
Yes. I'm Alice Henderson.
Well, Miss Henderson, we believe a man that we're looking for lives here.
Who?
We don't know his name, but he's about 45 years old. Has black hair. He's on the thin side. Wore an old blue jacket this morning with patched brown pants. We heard he'd been drinking.
Don't say another word.
You know him?
Sure enough.
What's his name?
Mr. Carter.
Is Mr. Carter in?
No, I'm sorry. He went out 3-4 hours ago.
Where to?
Well, he had on his good suit. Maybe he went speeching.
I beg your pardon?
I can see you all don't know Mr. Ray Carter.
No, we don't.
Why, the man can't hardly say pass the butter less than he makes a talk.
And where does he make these speeches?
Mostly by the park.
But what does Mr. Carter talk about?
Everything. He just naturally likes to make a speech.
Tommy, do you expect him back this evening?
He should be. I just cleaned his room and his box of tools are just sitting there in the corner.
What kind of tools?
Carpenters.
Jim, it'd sure help if we could examine his room.
Yeah.
Why, you come right ahead.
Oh, we can't yet, ma'am, but do you mind if Agent Wilson waits in?
Of course not.
Thank you.
I'll get a search warrant, George. Be right back.
Securing a search warrant, examining the possessions of a suspect, doesn't always produce results. Ray Carter's room contained the clothes he wore during the robbery and the kit of carpenter's tools. Fingerprints from the tools were wire-photoed to Washington. Again, the files showed no record. A surveillance was maintained at the boarding house, but Carter never returned. Meanwhile, the parade of interviews continued, this time with carpenters who might know Carter, with construction firms for which Carter might have worked.
Jim, anything in on Carter?
Yeah, a construction company in Valley Falls had a picture of Carter in their files.
When can we get it?
Oh, it's here already. I called the bank teller, too. He's on his way in now. If he makes a positive item, George, we'll run off copies.
Where's the picture now?
Here. Third one down in this pile.
Oh. A good, clear picture.
Yeah, it is. Oh, the construction company also sent along this list. Here.
Who are these people?
Carter's references.
Those your check marks?
Yeah, I called the police in each city just in case Carter contacts one of his old friends.
Any word on the stolen money?
No, Carter must be spending the old money first. If he passed one of those new 20s around here, I think we'd know him.
Yeah. Oh, over here, Mr. Butler.
Oh, have you found the holdup man?
No, not yet, sir, but we think we know who it was. Mr. Butler, will you please look at these pictures carefully? See if you can find one of the bandit there, will you?
All right.
Just take all the time you want.
Thank you. Oh, this is the man.
George, it's Carter.
And now back to the FBI file, The Toy Bandit.
Earlier in tonight's program, you heard a bartender express grudging admiration for the bank robber, an attitude toward criminals which is too widespread, an attitude that there is something glamorous about a man who would hold up a bank with a toy gun. Some people are still under the mistaken belief that criminals are romantic, clever, brave, even courageous. Your FBI has had more experience than most of lawbreakers. It offers you the opinion of an expert. As a group, criminals are venal, cheap, spineless parasites. Starting now, every good citizen should work toward an overhauling of the public psychology, a spreading of the realization that crime is a vile enterprise without a single redeeming feature, that any criminal anywhere is an enemy of every decent person and must be dealt with accordingly. Tonight's FBI file continues a few days later in the teletype room at the local FBI field office.
George, I hear something came in on Carter.
Yes, Jim, from the police of Springfield, Maine.
Is he all the way back there?
No, but they want him.
Oh, what for?
Non-support of his wife and two children. He deserted them in 49.
But I doubt that we'll find him in Springfield.
Probably not.
Oh, I've correlated all those employment records.
Oh, what's the story?
Carter gets good ratings for workmanship, but he never holds a job very long.
Always whiskey?
Or making speeches during working hours.
Well, he's consistent. Did he ever use any other name?
No, not that we know of. Why?
Well, I was wondering if he might have bought a car under an alias.
No. My guess is that he's traveling by thumb.
Oh? Well, how about distributing this picture to motels along the highway?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Now, wait a minute.
Huh?
Jim, there's Carter's name.
Oh, yeah, I see. Riotel Ray Carter list stolen currency. Two of missing $20 bills appeared here today. Orange City Police.
Orange City?
Yeah.
Carter's still within reach.
Come on, George, let's get up there.
The stolen $20 bills in Orange City had been passed in cheap saloons, but Carter had spent them and moved on. Then came other teletypes. Pineville, 3 stolen 20s. Again, the same pattern, cheap saloons, and further flight. Rivercrest, 4 stolen 20s. Decatur, 5 stolen bills. Greenwood, 3 stolen bills. Then came a report from Washington.
George, we just got word from Washington on Carter. The San Remo police submitted his prints.
They pick him up on our alarm?
No, they arrested him for drunk and disorderly. I spoke to a detective up there named Shelby. He's checking their drunk tank for us now.
Where's that warrant for Carter?
Here, right here. Pardon me, Georgie.
Sure, Jim.
Taylor speaking.
Harry Shelby at San Remo.
Well, you made a quick check. How's Carter?
He's been released.
Oh, no.
We missed him by an hour.
Well, thanks anyway.
You coming up here?
Yeah, on the next plane.
Pardon me, are you Agent Taylor?
No,
I am.
Harry Shelby. I'm the one who had you paid.
Oh, hello, Shelby. This is Agent Wilson.
Yeah. Shelby, how do you do?
Thanks for the nice weather.
Well, I'm afraid that's about all I've got to welcome you with. I don't know how to explain letting Carter get away, but...
No point in worrying about that now.
Carter was on a real spree here before we picked him up.
Oh.
He spent all the bills in cheap saloons?
Yeah. How'd you know?
Well, that's been his pattern.
Every one of the saloons was down on Skid Row. I got some old clothes that'll fit you, too. I thought maybe the three of us could go down there.
Good idea.
Yeah. We can distribute lists of the serial numbers on the stolen money to the cashiers while we're at it.
Okay.
How many of the 20s have you found?
8 so far.
8?
Uh-huh.
Well, there goes that lead.
Why? If Carter's here, he might pass a few more.
He can't. Those 8 were the last ones we had numbers on.
After changing clothes, Special Agents Taylor and Wilson joined Detective Harry Shelby in a tour of the local Skid Row, a street of cheap, poorly ventilated saloons, a few dirty hash houses, a dilapidated all-night movie, and more cheap saloons.
Carter passed one of the bills in that saloon.
Okay, let's drop in there, huh?
He spent all the money around here?
Yeah.
He didn't care much about luxury.
Yeah. Go ahead, Taylor.
Thanks, Frank.
I've got it.
There's an empty table.
Yeah, that's for us. Let's grab it, huh? Go ahead, Jim. Well, I don't see him at the bar.
Not at a table in this part of the room.
Hey, wait a minute.
You see him?
Oh, no. I thought I did.
Hey, we ought to drink a little.
There's somebody making a speech.
Yeah. In that group down at the end of the bar.
It could be him. What'll I see?
That's trouble today. Not enough of us take the trouble to thank people for helping us. Now, let's just take this glass of whiskey.
No, it's not Carter.
What made you think it might be? You know his voice?
Oh, but he likes to make speeches.
He's a real soapbox artist.
Oh, well, then maybe we ought to look for him at Edgewood Park.
What's Edgewood Park?
It's not as high tone as it sounds. It's so like Hyde Park in London. You know, an open-air spot where the soapbox orators can pop off.
You need a license to speak at the park?
Nope, just strong lungs.
Come on, let's get over there. What a tribute this place is.
Tribute to what? Insanity?
No, to the country. Except for Hyde Park in London, there's probably no place in the entire world where people can get up in public and say the things that we've heard tonight.
Well, you don't appreciate that so much when this is your beat.
This is a tough beat?
We get a riot call about once a week when the hecklers get out of hand and people start swinging.
We have a crowd around that platform.
Yeah, he usually has the best turnout.
Who is he?
Somebody called Rollo. Comes down every night and does a horoscope.
Who's?
Oh, he doesn't confine himself to people. He does one for the whole world.
Shelby, I think we ought to separate here. George, can you cover the people on the left? I'll head down the middle of the crowd.
Okay, I'll take the right-hand side.
Fine.
We meet at the speaker's platform.
What?
See you later.
Pick him up.
This is a public gathering place, and there is no way to keep certain people from joining our audience. I must ask you not to encourage that type with laughter. They'll always be among us. So long. so long as it's possible to enter our group merely by walking down that path.
Where'd you come from, Cloud 7?
I shall proceed. Moving into the house of Jupiter, we see a square aspect to Uranus. That means a period of great uncertainty for the world. Mars and Neptune may be in conjunction, but that means discipline is required to avoid disaster.
Listening to you is a disaster.
I cannot continue with this constant series of rolling harassment.
You want me to come up and take over?
George. George, come here.
Yeah, Jim.
You see that heckler?
Yeah.
There he is, making his way toward the platform.
Yes, I see him.
Come on, we can make the platform just about the same time. Pardon me, ma'am.
No,
I'm sorry. Well, let us through, please.
Excuse me, please.
Here,
George.
This is a time for contact, new work, and greater ambition.
It's also a time for you to quit.
Just a minute, Connor. I got
special agents of the FBI.
Is that him, Taylor?
Yes, Shelby.
I got to go up there and make a speech.
Come on, Connor. You're under arrest.
Ray Carter was convicted in federal court and sentenced to a federal penitentiary. The arrest of Ray Carter was the result and an example of how an investigation is conducted. An example of the ingredients that go to make a trained professional law enforcement officer at work. Those qualities are training, experience, common sense, and last, but perhaps most important, hard work. It is not important to you, the citizen, that no file is ever closed without hard work. But it is important to you that no FBI file is ever closed without the apprehension of the criminal. For that is your guarantee from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Your guarantee that no criminal will remain at freedom if he can possibly be caught. If working 24 hours a day around the clock will bring him to justice.
This is your FBI with a story called The Toy Bandit from January 4th, 1952. The Whistler is next, and you're listening to old-time radio drama here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join the conversation by emailing ideas at WPR.org and like us on Facebook at the Ideas Network.
I think you could say that every week the Whistler delivered on the nemesis, but that just happens to be the name of tonight's story, starring Gerald Moore, in which we find a magician and hypnotist finding out the hard way about a prediction regarding the end of a great career. This is The Whistler with the nemesis from January 3rd, 1943.
Wait a minute. Have you heard the strange tales of the Whistler? Sunday night, and again, CBS presents The Whistler.
I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight the strange story, The Nemesis. A big railroad station in America's biggest city. Many people here, many lonely people, many desolate souls, many strange people. Look over there, standing beside that exit, a beautiful girl with blue eyes and blonde hair. Lovely creature. Beside her stands a man, a dark, silent man. The blonde and the silent man search the crowd from the incoming trains feverishly. Then suddenly the beautiful blonde speaks.
Lou, there he is. That's Cartier.
Where?
The swanky one with the Homburg hat and the cane.
Oh, yeah, I see. Okay, Sandra. I'll get him.
See you later. You know what to do.
Yeah, I know. So long, Sandra.
Lou, the dark, silent one, slips quickly through the crowd and steps up behind the man in the Homburg hat.
Is your name Cartier?
What?
Cartier the Great? The magician?
Why, that's right. Who are you?
Doesn't matter. Just start walking.
What'd you say?
Out the door. That's a gun in your ribs, Mr. Cartier, so just keep walking.
What does this mean? I demand an
explanation. Just keep walking. To that cab at the curb.
Where are you taking me?
You'll be surprised.
Yes, Cartier, you will be surprised. You're going to the very place you planned not to go. But here you are, Cartier, right in front of it. A tall office building on 42nd Street.
All right. Get out, Cartier. You know where you are now.
Grover. It's Grover.
Get out. And no funny moves. I'll go along with you.
Careful, Cartier. Very careful across the walk into the elevator and up to the 7th floor. Well, here we are, the 7th floor.
All right, I'll leave you here, Cartier. Go on in.
What does he want? What does Grohlberg want?
I don't know, buddy. But go on in, you'll find out. See you later.
Oh, there you are, Grohlberg. Well, what a surprise. I really didn't expect to find you here this time of night.
And why did you come?
Oh, I wanted to see you.
Did you? I sent someone to see that you did come.
Well, now, wait a minute. I resent this. I'm getting a new manager tomorrow.
No, you're not. Not tomorrow or any other day.
Wait a minute. Are you threatening me, Grohlberg?
That depends. Where is it?
What?
The $2,000 you owe me.
Oh, well, I had a little trouble.
You used that the last trip.
Well, I'm sorry to say I haven't a cent, but I'll get it now. Give me a little time.
I've given you 2 years.
You'll get it. You act as though I was trying to beat you out of it.
You would if you got half a chance. Now, get this. I need that money, and I need it right away. I'm giving you exactly 5 days to dig it up.
But I haven't got it.
Then get it. I'll be waiting here at 6 o'clock next Saturday night. And believe me, Cartier, you'd better have it.
And if I don't?
Then I'll blackball you in every agency in the country. I'll see that you never work in Vaudeville again.
You wouldn't dare.
Wouldn't I?
Goldberg, I'll pay you that $2,000. When I get ready.
Saturday night.
No bushy-haired, fat face like you is going to threaten me. I don't need you. I can get a booking any day in the week.
Try it.
I don't like your nasty attitude. Good night, Grohlberg.
Wait a minute, Cartier. How would you like to dig up 3,000 instead of 2?
What do you mean?
Take a look at this. Ever see this check before?
George Wilton. $1,000.
Notice your signature. And see what it says? No account in this bank. You know, you shouldn't pay gambling debts with rubber checks.
Where'd you get that?
Georgie Welton needed some money. So I took it off his hands. Georgie's my partner now.
What are you going to do with it?
Keep it till 6 on Saturday night. You don't hand over the money, this goes to the DA. 6 o'clock, Cartier.
You're a swine, Grover.
You'll get the money?
No. No, not by Saturday, not 10 years from Saturday.
That final?
Yes, that's final.
Okay, too bad. This is the end of a great career.
And you can go to the devil. Get booking. Who'll I see first? Matt Rubicam.
Well, here you are, Cartier, standing in his office. It's Tuesday morning. You've got till Saturday.
Good morning. May I help you?
Yes, I'd like to see Mr. Rubicam. Cartier is the name.
Mr. Cartier to see you, Mr. Rubicam. Oh, yes, sir. He says he can't see you, Mr. Cartier. He's in conference.
What?
I'm sorry.
Nat Bromley, there's a swell guy. He tried to sign me up for years.
It's Wednesday now. Not much time left. Hurry, Cartier.
Nat, how are you?
I'm busy.
Look, I want to talk to you about a booking.
Yeah, leave your number with the boy.
Bromley, I wouldn't let you handle me if you begged me on your knees. I'm Cartier the Great. I'm big time. I'll show him.
It's Wednesday now. Only 2 days left. Harry Masnick, tackle him.
Hello, Harry. How goes it?
Oh, hello, Cartier.
I want to talk over that offer you made me.
What offer?
Why, any one of the 10 you made me last year.
I don't seem to remember any offer.
What? Are you kidding?
What do you do?
Now, wait a minute. Get down off your high horse, Harry.
Sorry, Magic ain't going this season. I could place a dog act.
If I didn't think you were kidding, I'd take a poke at you. It's Kralberg. Kralberg, that dirty rat. I didn't think he'd do it. Cut me out as clean as a whistle. This is Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday, and the next day is... What was it, Kralberg said?
The end of a great career.
This is Saturday. Not much time now. Time, time. That's what you want, Cartier. Time, remember? Hurry, it's 5 till 6. Kralberg's waiting.
Hello, Kralberg.
Oh, hello.
Hello, Kralberg. Have a heart,
will you? What do you want?
I didn't think you'd go through with it. I can't get booking any place. Now, how do you expect me to pay you back?
You said you didn't intend.
I know, but I've got a proposition to make about that check.
Nothing doing. You made your choice.
Now, you're not really going to turn it over to the DA?
With pleasure.
I see. Hey, what's that gun on your desk for?
Gun? Oh. I figured you'd be coming back, but I wasn't sure just what frame of mind you'd be in.
You expect me to believe that?
I don't care whether you do or not.
You know what I think?
I'm listening.
I think your back's against the wall. I think you're broke and you're facing something unpleasant.
Well, if I am, you aren't helping much.
I might.
Oh.
I've got a ring here that's worth at least $2,000.
Oh, I don't want any ring.
Now, wait a minute. Take a look at it. It's a cat's eye.
Yeah?
Yeah, it looks 4 miles deep. Notice the cut, the coloring, the depth of it?
Yeah.
This ring is worth money, Goldberg. A lot more than that check. I can't pay you all I owe, and maybe you can't pay all you owe, but a little would help us both.
Yeah?
You notice the fire in it? You see, you notice how it flares?
Yeah.
You're broke, Goldberg. You're broke. That's it. You're a failure. You haven't a chance. You're through. Look at this ring. This ring for the check. Okay. Give me the ring. There's only one way out for you, Goldberg. Better take that gun on your desk and use it for a one-way ticket. That's the best way out for you. You're a failure. You're washed up. You're through.
A failure. Washed up. Through.
Sorry, Goldberg. Good night.
Mr. Cartier.
What time is it?
5 after 6.
Thanks. Good night. See you in the morning.
Yes, sir.
Hello there, Billy. Give me a hand with these buckets, will you?
Sure. Well, what for are you starting on tonight?
7. Mamie's taking them up to 6. Here we are.
That's got it.
Work, work, work. At 65, I should have a place of my own with a garden. And here I am, slaving away at $12 a week.
Ain't much. But I only make 17, and I got a wife who likes clothes.
I heard that before.
Here you are.
Thanks. I'll ring when I'm ready for the next floor. Oh, what's that?
A shot. Hey, come from right across the hall.
Grohlberg's office.
Come on. Gee whiz. It's... Goldberg
shot himself. Holy Mother, get the police.
Now the same night, and we are standing at an open window, 8 flights up, still in Manhattan. That wide space out there is Washington Square. Yes, we're on Washington Square South, Greenwich Village. Artists, sculptors, models, actors, poets, and paupers. Behind you in this cheap apartment, a party's in progress.
Come on, folks. How about another drink?
Okay, make mine a Tom Collins.
I'm a Cuba Libre.
Help yourself in the kitchen. That's the best way. What's wrong with you, Sandra?
Nothing. Nothing's wrong. Why?
Oh, come on. Now, why, Mo? Cheer up.
Hey, Jerry. Who else is coming tonight?
Oh, quite a crowd.
Do you know who I like?
No, who?
That big, good-looking football player from Oklahoma. You know, the one he laughs all the time.
Ralph Brent?
Yeah, I like him. He's wealthy, isn't he?
Oh, that is why you like him. Who else is coming?
Well, remember Cartier, the magician?
Oh,
he did try to come.
Oh, maybe he'll do some of his tricks again. Oh, golly, it's hot in here.
Well, Ricardo, open that window in the kitchen. Get a breeze in there, huh?
Oh, somebody's at the door.
Hello, Cartier. Glad you could make it. You know, everybody, make yourself at home. Refreshments in the kitchen. Help yourself.
Thanks. Hello, everybody.
I think you know everybody. Sandra Hale, Cartier the Great.
Oh, yes, the magician. Yes, I should say I do know him.
Hello, Sandra, how are you? Will you help me in the kitchen?
Why, can't you pull your drinks out of your hat?
yeah, but it's awful stuff.
Come along, then.
Ah, let's see. What have we? Oh, yes, this is for me. How have you been, Sandra?
I hear you've been on the road a year.
That's right. Didn't you miss me? What have you been doing?
Modeling.
Modeling? Yeah, watch. There. Drink right out of your sleeve. Ever see that one?
Yes. Too often. Better save your tricks for the crowd. They'll be jealous. Come on, let's join
them. All right.
Come on, Cartier. We're waiting to be hoodwinked. What have you got in your bag this time?
Oh, a few oldies, a couple of new ones.
We don't care. I love them all.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. You see the scarf?
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute. All right, here's the scarf. Now, nothing in it. I wave it twice in the air, pass it around the room, and then I place it gently on Bella's head. Now, I remove the scarf, and there you are.
What is it? What happened?
Well, feel the top of your head, Bella.
Ain't it there?
Oh, feel.
Okay. My! Oh, that's a dirty trick.
Oh, you did.
Oh, she'll get over it. It was a white mouse. Come on in here, Sandra. I want to talk to you. Tell me, who do you model for, Sandra?
I did do some fashion photographs.
Did?
Yes, but lately it's been slow.
How lately?
Well, as a matter of fact, I worked only 4 times this year.
Only 4 times?
Mm-hmm. My books show $100 in the past year.
Really? Well, why don't you try something else? Why waste time modeling?
What, for instance?
Well, why don't you marry me, Sandra? You know, I love you. I've always loved you.
Why don't you give me a job?
As what?
An assistant.
So, you know, I believe you've got something there. I'd like that.
Good. When do we start rehearsal?
Right now.
Now? Oh, this is so sudden.
Oh, there's a lot to learn. It takes several months of hard work.
I don't mind.
You know, I've got several new ideas for next season, but I haven't decided on anything definite.
We could do a hypnotist act. I could be a stooge.
Hmm.
Hey, Cartier, come out of the kitchen. The big championship fight's on tonight. Want to listen? The preliminaries are on
now. Okay, just a minute. We're busy.
We can sure see that.
Sandra, have you ever been hypnotized?
Never. Why?
Well, it would make a terrific act.
How do you know you can hypnotize me?
I could try it.
Okay, try it.
All right. Here's a ring. Now you gaze into it. Don't look away. Just keep gazing. You're going to sleep. The ring. You're getting drowsy. You can hear no sound but my voice. Repeat what I say.
I am going to sleep. I am getting drowsy. I can hear no sound but your voice.
No sound but my voice. Take this pad and pencil. Write. Jerry is a simpleton. Now, wake up. Sandra!
Huh? What? Oh, how do you know you can?
Can what?
Hypnotize me.
I've just done it. Isn't this your writing?
Well, yes, but... Well, I didn't write
it. Oh, but you did. You did. I saw you, and very good. Say...
But I wouldn't write anything
Wait, let's try it again. Here, look in the light. Sleep. My voice. You can only hear my voice. And now asleep. Do you see Madison Square Garden? There's a fight going on. What round is it?
2.
If one man falls, tell me.
One falls.
Which one? Where are your cats?
Cats. They hold up the other's hand.
Sandra, wake up. Wake up!
Oh. What did I do?
Oh, nothing very important. Come with me. Ladies and gentlemen, quiet, please. I wish to make an announcement.
Oh, go ahead and make it.
From this day on, the act of Cartier the Great shall be billed as Cartier and Sandra.
Yes, yes, I've discovered a new partner. She is clairvoyant to the nth degree. I shall develop my new hypnotism act, and Sandra is to be my assistant. All right, okay. Come here, Sandra, take this ring. Sit down. I'm going to show you, pighead, something. Now, all right, now, Jerry, now, I don't know who you've invited here tonight. And if I did, there's no way about telling you to walk in the door next. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to hypnotize Sandra, and she's going to describe the one who'll enter next.
Oh, no.
All right, now, quiet. Wait a minute. Quiet, please. Sandra, sleep. Sleep. Drowsy. Drowsy. Look into the future. Tell us, Sandra, describe the person who will enter that door next. Speak.
A man. A small, thin man. Curly hair. A slight mustache. Eyes close together. Sunken chest. And he walks with a slight limp.
Hey, that's Georgie.
Georgie Welton.
Yeah, he's coming tonight. That's him exactly.
Did you say Georgie Welton?
Sure, you know him.
Yes, I know him.
Man.
She's saying something else.
Man. Oh, there's something wrong with him. He's in danger. In trouble. Yes, he doesn't know it. But he's approaching something terrible.
Sandra, wake up. Wake up!
Oh, what happened this time? What did I say? Well, why is everybody staring at me so strangely?
Why, it's Georgie. For the love of Mike, where you been?
I've been busy.
Sandra was right. She guessed it. It was you.
Hey, what was me?
Oh, she sure hit it.
Oh, it is uncanny. How do you do it, Sandra?
What are you talking about?
That's what I want to know.
Oh, nothing, Georgie. Forget it. Go on out into the kitchen. Help yourself. Anything you want.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, what's out here?
Hello, Georgie.
Cuddy.
Matter, Georgie? You look a bit pale.
What are you doing here?
Waiting for you, Georgie. Where you been hiding?
What do you want?
I want to make a little deal about that check I gave you. I'd like to get it squared up.
What kind of a deal?
Well, you see, I'm a little short of cash right now, and I knew you could use some, so I thought I might give you this ring. It's worth a couple of thousand. Be a good deal. How about it?
Well, I ain't got the check no more.
Where is it?
I sold it to Grover.
Why'd you do that?
I needed the dough.
Well, you can get it back and still have some left.
Yeah, I could, only...
What's the matter with you?
Well, ain't you hurt?
Heard what?
Kronberg's dead.
Dead? Dead. When did this happen?
Well, this evening at his office. So he committed suicide.
What do you know? Poor old Kronberg. I guess he got up against the wall. Huh?
Yeah. Hey, gee, I...
What's wrong?
I feel kind of sick and kind of dizzy.
It's pretty hot tonight. Come on over to the window. The air will help you. Here, drink this.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
Now, about this check. I'd like to have it. Take a look at this ring. This ring would make it more than worth your efforts in getting that check into my hands. You understand? I don't want anything like that hanging over me when I can possibly afford it.
Everybody happy?
Hey, who's that?
That's him, that's Ralph.
Oh, my football hero.
Ralph, where have you been?
Well, I got delayed over in Jersey. Hiya, gang.
Yeah, you know everybody.
Yeah, sure. Say, is the fight started yet? I got to hear that.
Oh, it's on now. Radio's in the bedroom. First round's just over.
Yeah, well, I'm betting kind of heavy on cats. Say, anybody want to bet? I'm offering 10-1.
How much you say you were offering?
10-1.
I'll take some of that.
Okay. How much?
Oh, I've got 200 to put on Murray.
Oh. Well, now, that's a bet. Are you sure you can spare?
I'm worrying about you.
Don't worry about me. No, sir. Well, turn it up. I want to hear it.
They come into the ring dancing. There goes Cat. He's a little groggy after that last one, but he's working hard now. There. Cat's land the left of the jaw. A right, the left, onto the... Oh, a hard left to Murray's stomach. And Murray looks a little tired, but he's in there punching. Yes, he's in there. Yes, oh, he landed the left of Cat's button. And he's falling it right through, left of the jaw. Another one, and there he goes. Cat is down. He's down. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He's out. Murray.
plan at all.
Well, you in, fella. Here you are.
Thank
Truth
you.
Out.
Thank you.
Say, where'd you get that hunch, Katya?
I don't know, Jerry. I'm sure I don't know.
Somebody else coming late, ain't they?
Yes?
What's going on here?
A party. Come on in, join us.
Thanks. On in, Murphy. Any of you people know George Welton?
Sure, we all do.
You know where he is?
He's here.
Oh, yeah, he's been here for some time.
Where is he?
Why, he's... Hey, who are you? What do you want?
Police headquarters.
Police?
What's he done?
I didn't say done anything. Where is he?
Georgie! Hey, where is Georgie?
He was out in the kitchen.
Well, get him, Bella. What's he done, officer? He's been here all evening.
Hey, Gary, he isn't here.
Well, look in the bedroom.
He's not here either. How on earth did he get out?
You want to know? Well,
why keep us in the dark?
Went out through the window.
That's ridiculous. There's no fire escape.
That's right. We just found him 8 stories below on the sidewalk.
Oh,
we found this note on him. Said he was sick and he was going to end it all. Makes it a clear case of suicide.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Huh? I thought he was acting funny.
Poor George, what a shame. I can't imagine what came over him.
Well, gee, she told us it was going to happen. I thought she was kidding.
Yeah, who told you?
Well, Sandra over there. She told us before George came in the room that he was approaching something terrible, that he was in trouble.
How'd she know that?
Well, I don't know. We were kidding, and Katya hypnotized her, and she described Georgie as the next one to enter, and then she told about something going to happen to him.
Oh, is that so? Well, who is she?
Sandra Hale.
Sandra Hale. Are you Cartier?
That's right.
What do you know about this Sandra Hale?
Well, I found that she was a very easy subject to hypnotize.
So... Hey, I'll bet that's how he knew who was going to win that fight tonight.
Yes, that's right. Under hypnosis, she has an uncanny power to see into the future.
What's the matter with her now? Why is she sitting over there in the corner?
Yeah, what's she staring at?
You better ask her a few questions.
I'd rather you didn't just now.
Oh, yes? Why not?
I hypnotized her and...
Yeah, why?
I wanted to see if she could tell me the winner in the derby tomorrow, and well... And you came in, and that sort of broke my control. I found it very difficult to snap her out of it quickly. I'll let her alone for a few minutes, and I'll get her out.
What's she staring at? What's she got in her hand?
She's mumbling something.
Wait a minute. Whose ring is this she's holding?
It's mine. In order to put the subject under, he must stare into a shining object.
Miss Hale. Miss Hale.
I asked you not to bother her.
Yeah? Miss Hale. Why, she's in a trance. Miss Hale, did you see George Welton in trouble?
Falling through space. Dying. He's dead.
Did he jump?
Yes. No. He's being forced. Forced to do something.
Against his will?
Yes. He's writing. Writing something.
Hey, Joe, give me that suicide note quick. Miss Hale, take this. Is he writing this note?
Yes. But he doesn't know it. Someone is dictating to him. I'm dictating to him.
You? What else do you see?
A shining object. It's blinding.
Go on.
Now he's sitting behind a desk.
The thin man? George?
No. He is bushy-haired and fat. He's high up. He is bushy-haired and fat, with a large nose, a mustache.
Sandra, wake up!
On, leave
wake
her
up!
Alone. Will you leave her alone?
She's in bad shape. I tell you, something might happen to her.
A bushy-haired fat man at a desk. What's he doing?
There's a gun on the desk. He's staring at something. Something bright. He's saying something. No. Someone else is saying something. I am saying something to him.
Does this fat man have a gold front tooth?
Gold front tooth. Yes.
Hey, that's a perfect description of Kroberg, Georgie's partner.
Certainly is. He shot himself tonight. Is someone dictating to him?
Yes. I am.
You? Are you in the same room?
No. I am standing on the curb below. I am looking up and mumbling.
What are you mumbling?
Pick up gun. Only way out. Against your temple. Fire.
Let her alone. You're killing her. Sandra!
That was the bright object he was staring at.
I don't know. Yes, I see it. I see it now.
The ring?
Yes, a ring. A shining cat's eye. I must escape.
The same ring the thin man saw before he fell?
The same. I must escape.
The same you're staring at now?
The same, the same, the same! Cat's eye! Cat's eye! Cat's eye!
I killed them both! What do you know
about this? Oh, I know. She knows. Oh, well, Cartier, how do you like that? Hey! Hey, where is he?
Wait, Cartier, he's gone!
You dope, why didn't you stay at the door?
Well,
hey, anybody leave this room, Murphy?
Well, yeah, the fellow went upstairs, but nobody went down.
Upstairs, that's him. Murphy, downstairs and cover the elevator. Come on, Joe, he's probably making for the roof. We'll go after him.
Time. More time. One more floor. I need time. 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 One more floor. There it is. The door to the roof.
15 feet to that other roof. I can make it.
I've got to make it. 15 feet or 15 stories straight down. 15 feet or 15 stories.
Percy! Stop! Don't shoot!
Well, Cartier, there you are, 15 stories down. This is one trick you must. Maybe this is what Grohlberg meant when he said,
"The end of a great career."
Too bad, Cartier, that you didn't know what I know. A woman was your nemesis, Cartier. Yes, a woman. A beautiful blonde with blue eyes. Remember Sandra? Yes, Sandra. You really hypnotized Grohlberg and Georgie, and Sandra, too, the first time, but not the second time. Sandra was faking then. She was too strong-willed for you. She was faking. She suspected you, and for good reason. She had married Grohlberg a month ago. It was Sandra who pointed you out to the man at the station. Yes, Cartier, a woman was your nemesis.
CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The Whistler is written and directed by J. Donald Wilson and originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood. Next week, same time,
I, The Whistler, will return to tell you another unusual tale. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Gerald Moore, always convincing, whether he was the star of the series, the star of the episode, or a supporting character, there in The Nemesis. A story from The Whistler, from January 3rd, 1943. Prepare to enter next the inner sanctum, as old-time radio drama continues right after this on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Second Century Endowment Fund, a board-designated endowment fund providing ongoing financial support for WPR in its second century of service to the residents of Wisconsin.
We have a new, stronger signal at 107.9 FM. I'm the Ideas Network Director, Cheryl Gasser, inviting you to listen to the Ideas Network, where Wisconsin connects.
Raymond and Mary get to discuss the virtues of tea and the darker side of life, which is always the case in the inner sanctum, if not to be taken with a grain of salt, with a sip of Lipton's tea, the stories from the inner sanctum. Tonight it's called Desert Death, and we find a couple of guys driving across the desert and seeing some hitchhikers which does not bode well for much of anybody, in Desert Death, from the Inner Sanctum, and a broadcast of January 9th, 1945.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is Raymond, your host. Welcome again to the Inner Sanctum. Come in, won't you? You'll have to excuse me for not getting up, but I have an awfully stiff neck. You see, I was out with a certain lady last night who collects very curious things. She spent the first half of the evening telling me how wonderful I am, but after that... Well, it's one thing when a girl tries to turn your head. It's another when she tries to twist it off. And now, friends, let me introduce someone who is a real lady. She must be a lady because she wants to reform me. Come in, Mary Bennett.
Hello, folks.
Draw up a coffin and sit down, Mary.
Now, Mr. Raymond, please don't talk that way. It is nice. Why are you always pretending to be so cold-hearted and creepy? Underneath, I'm sure you're a friendly, good-natured sort of man. Yes, you are. Underneath, you're just like everybody else. I'll bet you like to come home in the evening, put on an old jacket and slippers, and then sit down to supper. Yes, sir, and I'll bet I know one of your favorite dishes, too. Noodle soup. Well, most all men like noodle soup. That's why Lipton's is so popular. Lipton's noodle soup is real homemade tasting. It's got a grand chickeny flavor, and it's swimming with noodles. Egg noodles, too. You know, Lipton's noodle soup will bring a family swarming to the table quicker than a dinner bell. Mr. Raymond, someday I'm going to take you home with me and feed you a good hot bowl of Lipton's noodle soup.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Mary. And now let me invite you to come to the desert and hear the story of Desert Death. It's an original tale written by that spinner of surprise stories, Robert Newman. And our star tonight is Horace Braham. The desert, eerie and mysterious at sundown. The sun sinking slowly in a purple haze. The cactus casting long and weirdly twisting shadows. The hot wind still. Silence over all. Driving fast, a dusty car comes down a narrow desert road. At the wheel is Dan Darrell, a rancher. Next to him is his Indian friend, Toby Priest.
Still worrying, Toby?
Stop teasing me, Dan. You know I never did worry. I just told you what my people used to think it meant.
Used to think? Didn't you say we ought to postpone our trip into town today?
I did.
And when did you say it? Right after you saw them. Three vultures flying together toward the sunset. That means 3 days. A bad omen for a journey. Hey. Look.
I see him.
What's a man doing out here in the middle of nowhere on foot? Anything the matter, stranger? Needing help?
You're very kind. Our car broke down and... Well, we were in a bit of a spot. Didn't know whether anyone would be likely to come along here or not.
I didn't see your friends. Well, climb in. We're going to Palo Verde. We're glad to take you that far.
Well, that's very decent of you. Thanks.
Thank you. My name is Darrell, Dan Darrell, and this is Toby Priest.
And I'm very happy to know you. I'm Richards, and this is Brennan and Smith.
How do you do?
Howdy. You're British, ain't you?
Why, yes. Clever of you to spot it. We're on our way out to the coast. One of those hush-hush missions. That's why it's so important we get into town.
Oh, sure, sure. Which way'd you come? Medicine Creek or Route 12?
Why, Medicine Creek. It sounded more scenic.
You're lying, Dan. You know that, don't you?
What makes you say that?
Toby, use your head. He doesn't look.
Mr. Darrow, surely it's considered rude to whisper in front of strangers, even here in America, isn't it?
What? Oh, sorry.
Yes, I'm sure you will be. But first I must insist on knowing what you were saying.
Insist? What you mean, insist? This is my car and this is a...
I know, a free country. But this is a gun. That's why I can insist. Now, will you tell me what you were saying?
I was saying it, so I'll tell you. I said you were lying, that you weren't British at all.
No? Then who are we?
I think that you're Nazi prisoners who escaped from that camp up near Post City.
Oh? And what makes you think that?
First, none of your clothes fit you, so they're obviously not yours. Second, you said your car broke down, but there wasn't any car around. Third, you said you came by way of Medicine Creek, and that road's closed.
All right. Stop the car and let us get it over with.
You mean shoot them? Not so quick, Bernard. We can use them for a while yet. At least one of them.
What the devil do you mean?
Of course, your Indian friend is right. Very clever, too. But since I have a gun, you will take orders from me. Our first need is water. Do you have any in the car?
No.
Then we will have to find some.
Yeah? Where'd you expect to find water in the desert?
I told you we were Nazis, Darrow. I did not tell you that we were Rommel's men from the Africa Corps. That means we know the desert, any desert, better than anyone on Earth. Those hills off there to the left. Take the left-hand road at that fork there and head toward them.
But
do as I say.
How much further you want me to go up this wagon track?
Slower. Isn't that a... Yes, it's a shack right next to the cliff. Stop.
Looks deserted, but there, next to it. Is that not a well?
It should be. Brenner, go see if there's any water in it.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
You two come with us. We'll go look at the shack. What is this place? Those terraces up there on the cliff?
A pueblo. Cliff dwellings. Centuries ago, my people lived in villages like this.
There is water in it, Herr Colonel. Even a bucket to get it up with.
Good. Come into the house. Match, Schmidt. From the dust, I'd say no one had been here for a good many years. Prospector's cabin, wasn't it?
Probably.
That means... there's what I want. Shovel.
What the devil do you want that for? Want to dig yourself a grave?
Yes, Darrow, exactly. But not for me.
Huh? What you mean?
Precisely what I said. Sit down. Make yourselves comfortable and I will explain things to you.
I'll stand if you don't mind.
Oh, not at all. We Nazis are very objective, analytical people. We decided we needed a car to make our escape in. Now we have one. We also decided we needed someone to drive the car and get us safely across the border. That means we can use one of you. The other one will die.
You wouldn't dare.
My dear Darrow, outside of the thousands of men we killed in North Africa, who don't count, we killed at least two guards in making our escape. Do you really think one more death means anything to us? The only question is, which of you shall die?
This one here. He talks too much.
Well, that's not quite fair, Brenner. He's just, shall we say, less stoical than the Indian. On the other hand, I think that in the long run, he would probably prove easier to handle, less dangerous. That means that the Indian dies.
What? Why, you...
Shut up, you!
Thank you, Brenner. Schmidt. Take the gun, the shovel, and our Indian friend,
yeah,
and watch over him while he digs his grave. Very nice. Very nice indeed. Of course, I personally would prefer a deeper grave, but that's up to you.
The depth is not important. The only thing that matters is that it faces west. That is why I dug it with the head against the cliff. an old tribal custom.
Very interesting. Similar to the Egyptians. But of course, they believed in a life after death.
My people believe in a life after death also, Colonel. And in this case, I think I can promise that I will not rest easy in my grave.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Hear this too, men from across the seas. Men with death in your hearts. For the evil you would do, evil will follow you like a hungry wolf.
What is that?
What he just mentioned. A wolf.
Though you bury me deep, the earth will not hide me till you have paid for your crimes. Here where you have killed, here too will you die.
Now, here, Colonel.
Yes, Brenner.
No, you can't, you...
Very good, Schmidt. I'll take the gun now. Fill in the grave, then meet us back at the cabin.
What a place. It's worse than Quatara.
I wish you'd sit down, Daryl, and stop staring out of the window.
You're worried about your friend. I buried him very nicely.
I'm not worried about him. I'm thinking about what he said before you killed him. I should think that you think about it, too.
That? We have had more curses laid on us in more languages than you have hairs on your head.
What's that?
Must be the wind. No. No, it is different. More like some kind of musical instrument.
But there's no one around here but us. There hasn't been anyone living in those houses up on the cliff for centuries.
It's just the wind, I tell you. But if you want to, go take a look.
Go take a look, I said.
Ja, wohl, Herr Kohl.
It's too dark. There's too much sand blowing to see anything. But wait! Go there near the foot of the cliff. There's something. It looks like... Leave a God! It's the Indian. He's lying there. Out of his brain.
Oh, you bury me deep. The earth will not hide me. You are paid for your crimes. Here where you are killed, here too will you die. A 100 curses in a dozen different tongues. Perhaps they did mean 3 deaths. If so, who are the others that'll die and who will live?
Gosh, Mr. Raymond, this is exciting.
What? Oh, Mary Bennett, I've overlooked you in all this desert. Tell me, Mary, whom do you hope will die, huh?
Well, I don't like to see anybody killed. But those Nazis sure ought to be clapped in jail.
Mm-hmm. And deprived of their Lipton's noodle soup, huh, Mary?
Well, I should say... Lipton's noodle soup is much too good for fellas like them. It belongs to law-abiding folks who've got a right to sit down to a plate of homemade tasting soup. And say, that's just the kind of noodle soup you get when you use Lipton's. Lipton's is the noodle soup with the old-fashioned flavor, you know, brimming with noodles and blessed with a real chickeny taste. Yes, it takes Lipton's to show how good a noodle soup can be.
Now, Mary, don't get so excited. Stay calm. Why don't you go and perch on that tombstone over there while I go on with the story of death in the desert? I'm warning you, if I do go on, you'll be seeing strange sights and hearing strange sounds every time you put out the lights. But it's your funeral. It's just a moment later now. The 3 Nazis are still standing at the open door of the deserted cabin, staring out into the darkness. And the colonel turned sharply, glares at Daryl.
What was that you said, Daryl?
I was just repeating what Tova said. Before you murdered him.
It's true, Herr Colonel. That's what he did say. The earth will not hide me. And there he is, out of his grave, lying dead.
Fine Nazi you are. A fine example of the Afrika Korps. Listening to the ravings of a savage and believing them. Schmidt. Where did you bury the Indian? In the sand. Then this wind came along and blew the sand away. And that's all.
And that strange music?
Another trick of the wind. But if it bothers you to see him lying there, go on out and bury him again.
deeper this time.
No, Herr Colonel, no.
Well, that's an order.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
Freund Schmidt seems to be getting a bit rattled.
That's why I sent him out there. Nothing like facing a fear to overcome it.
Colonel Ulrich, do you not think it is about time that Schmidt came back?
He's only been gone about 5 or 10 minutes. I told him to dig the grave deep this time.
I know, but I do not see him out there anywhere.
Well, how could you expect to when it's so dark and when the sand is blowing like that? Maybe we'd better go out and see what's taking him so long. And you too, Mr. Darrell, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Schmidt! Schmidt, where are you? Blasted idiot. Probably wandered off into the desert. Schmidt!
Well, look. The Indian. He is still lying there. Enough of that, bury him.
That means Schmidt never even got over there. Must have lost his way right after he got outside. Schmidt!
I think you can save your breath, Colonel Ulrich. Come on over here. The well.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Schmidt. Dead.
Well, why are you looking at me like that, Brenner? It's exactly as I said. He lost his way in the darkness, the sandstorm, fell down the well.
Yeah. I guess that is what must have happened.
As for you, Mr. Darrell, since you discovered Schmidt, you shall have the pleasure of burying your friend the Indian again.
Jawohl, Colonel.
I'm sorry, I never did appreciate the American type of humor. Now get busy with that show.
May I just point out that while it's easy for you to knock me down when my hands are tired, it's not so easy for me to use a shovel.
Oh, I intend to untie you. But please remember always that I have a gun and that Brenner and I have every intention of getting away from here. I'm happy to see that you've stopped pacing the floor and looking out the window, Mr. Darrell. That means you've stopped expecting something miraculous to happen that will save you.
Is that what you think it means?
Frankly, no. In fact, I think just the opposite. You're looking much more cheerful than before. You're thinking one of them is dead. Now it'll be that much easier to get away. It really pains me to disillusion you. Schmidt was a sergeant. A fool. I can assure you that neither Brenner nor myself are going to be bothered by strange noises or tricks of the wind. Right, Brenner?
Of course not, Colonel.
Good. And now, if we're to make an early start, I think we should get some rest. Brenner, you take the first watch and wake me at midnight. I advise you to get some rest too, Darrell. Maybe you'll be able to dream of some way of escaping.
Thanks. But I'm not sleeping.
As you wish. Good night.
Quite a character.
He was one of the best soldiers in the Africa Corps.
Yeah? Where's Africa Corps now? Where are you? This isn't Africa, Brenner. This is America. This is a part of America where strange things happen. Things that even the Indians can't explain.
Indians. Ignorant savages. The devilish music again. Where does it come from?
I thought you said it was a wind. Or was it Ulrich that said that?
Must be the wind. It must.
Oh, you bury me deep. The earth will not hide me till you pay for your crimes.
What is that?
That was what Tova said just before you killed him.
Schmidt was first, Brenner. You will be next. I'm waiting, Brenner. Waiting.
You're
waiting.
You heard that, Tova?
Yeah, I heard it.
You're lying. You're lying, I say. You're just trying to frighten me.
What? Who's trying to frighten you? What's going on?
It is nothing here, Colonel. Just that music again. And for a moment, it sounded as if someone was calling my name.
Someone was calling your name, Brenner. A dead man. You know you heard it.
So?
There it is again. You hear it?
Just that same noise, the wind.
Look, Coleridge, look. That Indian, he's out of his grave again.
How can you tell? It's too dark to see.
But I know he is. I know it.
I'm very disappointed in you, Brenner. You're losing your grip, slipping.
I'm sorry, Herr Colonel. It is just this place, the nervous tension, the waiting.
Just being sorry isn't enough. Fear is a weakness. As much of a weakness as pity. You know that as Nazis we cannot tolerate either one. And you also know what you must do, don't you?
No. No, Herr Colonel. No.
You must face your fear and overcome it. You must go out there and prove to yourself that you are not afraid. That you've just been imagining things the way Schmidt did.
But Schmidt...
Schmidt was a fool. And he had an accident. You are an officer. And you will not have an accident. Now go ahead and convince yourself that this is all nonsense.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
But leave the gun with me. What's out there is imaginary, but Mr. Darrell is very real. If I didn't have a gun, he might get ideas.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel. Here. I will be back in a few minutes.
You're looking at me very strangely, Mr. Darrell. Perhaps now you're starting to understand the fiber of the Nazi character. And perhaps now you're beginning to realize why you can never win this war. Because we allow nothing to defeat us or stand in our way. Any sign of weakness is ruthlessly stamped out. And people. God, what's that?
Sounded to me like Brenner.
Outside, quick. And don't try to get away or I'll shoot you down in your tracks.
Okay. Which way?
Towards the cliff, where we buried the Indian. That's where he went and... What's that over there?
My guess is that it's your friend, Brenner. Maybe you'd better make sure.
It is Brenner. Dead. Strangled.
So it was all imagination, eh? Just face your fear and overcome it. Aren't you feeling just a little frightened, Colonel?
Yeah. No. There's some rational explanation for everything that happened. Look. The Indian. He is out of his grave again. And that's the answer. He wasn't dead. But this will take care of him. There. And you will notice that even at a moment like this, I look ahead. One shot before and four now. That still leaves one bullet for you, if it should prove necessary.
You think of everything, don't you?
Yes, my friend, everything. Now get into that car. We're not going to wait until morning. We're leaving here right now.
I thought you had everything figured out. And you weren't frightened.
What's that?
What's what?
That noise, that music. It's like the music we heard after we killed the Indian.
I don't hear anything.
Oh, but you must hear it. You must. Listen, it's coming from over there.
For the evil you have done, evil will follow you like a hungry wolf. Though you bury me deep, the earth will not hide me till you have paid for your crimes.
Did you hear that? Did you hear it?
Yeah, I heard it.
Here where you have killed, here too will you die.
No. No. You're dead. You're dead, I tell you. I killed you.
First Schmidt. Then Brenner. Now you.
But you're dead, I tell you. And the dead don't speak. I can't be really hearing you unless... Mad. No. I can't let that happen. I can't. There's one way. The Nazi way. A way to fool you all. This is why you'll never beat us. Never. Never.
Toby. Toby. Where are you?
Over here. At the foot of the cliff.
Are you all right?
That first bullet creased my head. I was already dropping by the time he fired. Outside of that, I'm all right.
I figured that was what had happened when Schmidt went down the well. I knew it was an accident.
I was pretty happy that it was you that buried me the second time.
that you put my face against the cliff, left a hole for me to breathe. The first time, well, it was pretty tough until the wind blew the sand off.
Yeah, but what about when he shot you again? That ungodly music.
It wasn't me he shot that second time. It was Schmidt. I pulled his body out of the well. I figured that in the dark, no one would be able to tell the difference. As for the music, that's why I dug the grave here. You see these holes here in that cliff? My people drilled them centuries ago. The wind blows through them. Makes weird music. This bottom hole was blocked up, but I opened it while I was digging the grave.
Talking of graves, there's three of them we should be digging right now. Just one more thing I'd like to ask you, Toby.
What's that?
What you said this morning. Those three buzzards flying together toward the west. Does it really mean three deaths?
There were three deaths. Weren't there, Dan?
Atta boy, Toby. Never give a Nazi an even break. Unless it's in the neck. As for our three visiting murderers, they may not like our sense of humor, but they can't complain about our poetic justice. After all, it was in the desert that they got their just... deserts? Well, Mary Bennett, did you like the desert with its sand and wind and weird music? Would you like to live there?
Well, I wouldn't mind so much. You know, I believe a woman can make a good home in some pretty out-of-the-way places, the way the old-time housewives did. But, well, I'd want to lay in a supply of good modern food. Food that's easy to make, like Lipton's noodle soup. Say, that noodle soup of Lipton's would really put some cheer in the desert, wouldn't it?
Yes, of course, Mary, of course. Remind me to take Lipton's with me on my next safari. We must have a word of advice. It is. If you should wake up one of these nights in a cold sweat, convinced that there's something or someone in your room, and if when you look toward the window you should see a strange figure silhouetted in the moonlight, then pull the blankets up over your head and don't look out again. It'll be one of our three friends from tonight's story. One of the Africa corpses. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Puzzle for Puppets by Patrick Quentin. Well, now I guess it's time to close that there squeaking door until next week at this same time. So until next Tuesday night, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Folks, here we are outside the squeaking door. And I guess we're all pretty thirsty after all that talk about deserts. Well, I know just the thing that'll put us back to normal again. It's Lipton tea. Yes, a cup of that brisk Lipton tea would do just fine. And did you notice that word brisk? B-R-I-S-K. It's a mighty important word in tea language. The tea experts always use it. It means that Lipton tea has a lively flavor, never wishy-washy. That's why most folks prefer Lipton's to any other kind. Don't forget, that's Lipton tea. And don't forget to tune in again next Tuesday night to Inner Sanctum.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, the Nazis and the German army were still very much a factor when the Inner Sanctum was broadcast. And with that story, Desert Death, it was on the air January 9th, 1945. some weird music to help things along there, and a story about driving through the desert and some hitchhikers that you really should not pick up. That's it for Old Time Radio Drama for tonight. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we'll have more next time around, and I hope you can join me for that here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.